high desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening and or good morning across this great land of ours and beyond, the island of Guam in the west, eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. You're not going to believe what we've got in the first hour for you. You must immediately go to my website at www.artbell.com. You must then immediately click on program and tonight's guest info. In the first hour, you'll see Richard C. Hoagland just before thunder strikes. In the second hour, on shadow people, and click on the image that says D&M. What does it say? D&M letters. Click on that and get ready to have your mind blown by Richard C. Hoagland. This has been kept under the rug for a while. He'll explain as best he can. Let's see. There's a couple. First of all, I've got to say hello there, KXYL FM. FM. That's very important. In Brownwood, Texas, 104.1 on the dial, 74,000 watts. That's a lot of power. KXYL FM, Brownwood, Texas, 104.1, 74,000 watts. Now, more and more FM stations, you may have noticed, are beginning to pick us up. And just for you FMers out there, we have gone to 128-bit audio. I really neglected to say this to you for a while, but we've gone to 128-bit audio, which is superb. And it should sound really good on FM radio stations. Don't know if you'll notice a difference on AM. You may. There's some pretty doggone good AM stations out there if you get a lot of high-end. But we've made a big improvement. Also, I talked to one of the really big powers that be in our company earlier today. And when XM Radio makes its debut, that's the satellite right down to car type thing, XM Radio. This program will be there, I am told. Now, you might want to know, we'll be there, cutting edge all the way. When it happens, we're cutting. In a moment, I'm presuming that you're going to my website right now and looking at these photographs. Get ready for the story behind them. It's a total mind blower. Richard C. Hoagland has it. He will also address the rumor of this latest shot to Mars, whether there was actually a controversy about whether to include Richard's picture along with Sir Arthur's or not. A big controversy there in NASA, but that could be, you know, just a rumor. All right, I know not everybody has a computer. What we have here are pictures of the D&M area on Mars, which clearly show some writing. So quickly get to my website. If not, you're going to have to understand that what we're dealing with here are photographs of Mars that show they show lettering. Either somebody took a pen and actually wrote on these photographs. That's unlikely, and you'll get the chain of custody and find out why in a moment, or I don't know what. God, what a story. So get up there and take a look. Here is Richard C. Hoagland, advisor to NASA, to Walter Cronkite, and winner of the Engstrom Medal and for science and so much more. Richard, what about that big fight within NASA to include your picture with Sir Arthur C. Clarke?
Darn, you actually heard about that, huh? A little later in this hour, we're going to get to another email that my friend Arthur Clarke has been sending. This one was
really
sent, I guess, Saturday on the 7th to the team that just launched the Mars Odyssey back to Mars. And there's some very interesting stuff contained in that email, which everybody's going to want to hear about. But first, let's talk about this picture. It's too bad that most people don't have computers yet.
Just before we do, Richard, last night's program, the program I did here.
Yes.
Anybody who left that program early last night was out of their minds.
They missed something.
It was, what do you think?
Well, it was quintessentially hyperdimensional. I mean, the idea that aliens come to Earth, pick a guy up, and basically teach him how to build a granite spacecraft is cereal box stuff. It's Looney Tunes. Unless you listen carefully as the program tracked.
That's right.
As this reporter you interviewed unveiled the story, as people called in with clippings and confirmation that this guy's been doing this since the 70s and blowing out power grids, and people have got photographs of one of these things escaping, you know, one of his models and all this. You know, it's to me, it's part of the mega pattern, which is somebody. See, now that we've got ruins on Mars, now that we know there's really stuff and folks out there, you can say this with a straight face, which is, if we really have relatives, if the model is that the human race has kind of been cut adrift from its previous history, and there are folks doing things out there, and there's a whole busy commerce and civilization and, you know, federation and God knows what else going on that we're not aware of because
right.
we're kept in the dark.
Right.
It stands to reason that somebody from time to time will say, oh, those poor benighted souls, we've got to bring them into the family again. And they'll keep trying various venues to introduce us to the idea that, no, we're not exactly alone after all. And he made a big point about talking how they looked exactly like us.
Yes.
All right, that's important. And a lot of the detail, I think, is kind of clever smokescreen. In other words, you're not supposed to believe everything. Between the noise, there's real signal. Between the noise, there's real stuff you can use to let us bootstrap ourselves out of the mess we're in. And we've got forces on this planet, as we talk about on the show all the time, that don't want us to know what's really going on.
Well, last night, again, it all sort of fell into place, you know,
sure
bit
did.
By bit, and then your brain went, boom.
Well, the
all
thing
right.
that...
Listen, short form tonight, Richard. We better get on with it.
Okay. Let me do one more thing.
Yes.
When he started talking about the rings and the balls and the rocking underneath the spacecraft,
yes.
I clearly recognized a phenomenon called forced precession. Remember how he said that brings the energy in from the other dimension to allow this thing to fly?
Yes, and the faster
right.
the faster it flies, the faster it flies.
Exactly, and unless you have a governor to control the mechanical part, it will run away with itself. It's called positive feedback.
Right.
That's exactly the problem with hyperdimensional physics and technology. Unless there is a negative feedback loop, unless you have a like a brake on it, it will run away with itself. So there were so many things about that rang true
I know.
To what we have figured out that we haven't published yet.
By the end of the program last night, my mind was going a million miles an hour, and I couldn't stop it. It was runaway.
The key part was, the granite part, you don't have to build a spacecraft out of granite. That's obviously what they want us to think about in terms of these ancient monuments like Stonehenge and the Miami Circle and the other things to connect back to our own heritage back when we knew this stuff before we were cut off from the rest of the family. So there's levels in this tale, and I really want to get the book and read carefully what this guy's written. And then I'd like to go with you up there and see this thing. Can we do that?
Yeah, we probably could, Richard. I really want to see it. So, you know, let's proceed quietly.
Okay.
You know, because this poor fellow, it was said last night, and I believe it, if we approach this without caution, we're going to cause him a lifetime of grief. And
exactly.
So, all right, yes, we'll talk privately. Now, these photos. First, they are of... Richard, how long have you had these photographs?
3 years.
Oh, my God.
Literally 3 years from 4 nights ago.
Where are the photographs are of the D&M region?
They were on the first image strip that Malin took in 1998 on April 5th that came down and were posted on the JPL website the morning about 10:30 Pacific on April 6th, and we discussed that night.
Mm-hmm.
They were at the very bottom. They are at the very bottom. I found them a couple, 3 days into this exercise, you know, as we were looking with microscopes at this whole digital image.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed on the D&M pyramid, which about half of the pyramid got photographed in that first low-angle pass, and as I was working on enhancements and doing this and trying to eliminate noise and, you know, cursing the fact that it was such a lousy picture, you know, that cat box image, as a Mr. Art Bell has now made immortal the world over, I saw this stuff on the D&M on the right-hand side, on the upper right of that arm that sticks up on the Viking images, and I said... Holy!
Yeah, I know. I said the same thing. Sure, it's writing. It is
clearly Arabic writing.
Yeah,
it is two lines of script.
Arabic.
Arabic writing, you know, Arabic letters, A's, B's, F's, D's, whatever.
Yeah.
In the middle, there are two A's linking, kind of on a diagonal, the two lines. The script is oriented exactly normal on the picture. In other words, you don't have to rotate the image or cock your head or whatever. It's just looking at the frame. There are these big letters, and they're about 150 feet tall if they're on Mars, if they're on the pyramid in terms of the scale of the image. Now, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, holy whatever, this is the biggest discovery, because the first thing that popped into my mind is, this ain't on Mars. There's no way that, quote, Martians, millions of years ago when this stuff was done by all the models we've worked on for 20 years, would A, have invented the Arabic alphabet, B, have put them on the pyramid in a way that they could have survived dust storms and erosion and ultraviolet and all the other stuff for millions of years, and then would have known what the orientation should be. So they just happened to be nice and right side up when we took a picture millions of years later. It just didn't seem to be in the cards. So
yeah,
my
model, I'll pretty much buy that, but before you get to your model, let's talk about the chain of custody of these photographs, of what are now photographs, at least, on the website.
Okay, that's important.
Yeah, it's real important. So,
because part of the agreement with NASA to get this picture in April of 98, that Malin kicking and screaming and saying, oh, this is the worst stupid thing science has ever done, and I need $400,000 from headquarters to take these pictures, all that went on. Remember all that?
Vividly.
The agreement was that the picture would be taken. There would be notice given before, which they did this time, 3 years ago. They would take the picture. They would then downlink it to the JPL computers and then down to Malin's computers, which is in San Diego, 300 miles south of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And he would put them promptly up on the web with absolutely nothing done. They would be raw data, and there would be no comment, no sniping from the Peanut Gallery of NASA.
All of that I clearly remember. So, in other words, you are saying these digital pictures basically came from Mars.
Yep.
Yeah, through some computers.
Yep.
But basically untampered completely.
Well, that's what was supposed to happen.
Supposed to be untampered with completely, right?
Yep, yep. So, but let me tell you what really happened. The pictures were taken around midnight on the 5th. Just after midnight on April the 5th.
Okay.
They didn't get to the public for 36 hours later, across that half weekend, from Sunday night to Monday morning, you know, Sunday night just after midnight Pacific time. They were on Earth. They were literally in JPL's computers. But for 36 hours, they laid there untouched until Malin, at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, ostensibly picked them off, you know, his version of the web, the inner NASA web, did something with them for an hour and a half in his computers, spit them back up to JPL, where at 10:30 they were put up for everybody on the world to see. So for 36 hours, we don't know what the chain of custody was, because they were not promptly posted.
But there's no reason to believe, at least with solid evidence, that anybody put in Egyptian lettering on Mars.
Of course there is, because there are 36 missing hours.
Well, I know, but 36 missing hours does not, in a court of law, even come close to indicting anybody for sneaking Arabic letters on.
Wait a minute. In a court of law, you need means, motive, and opportunity. Here we have the means. It's called a digital mask. All right. The motive is to basically. Well, we'll get the motive in a second. The opportunity is that 36 hours. So you've got all three prerequisites. Let me tell you why I, from the beginning,
yes,
was suspicious.
But to convict, you'd never get a conviction, Richard, unless you approved your case beyond a shadow.
I'm not saying we have a conviction.
A shadow of a doubt. I'm saying we've got a controversy here.
I'm saying we have an indictment.
I'm saying controversy.
This is what is so important and why these letters are so interesting.
Well, you don't need that much proof for an indictment, so maybe an indictment.
All right. Let me tell you why I've been suspicious from the get-go.
All right.
Because that image was so bad. Remember how we went on the show and we talked about histograms and grayscales?
Yeah. And then finally I said chatbots. It looks like a damn cat.
There was almost no data left in the image.
Yes, yes.
I have always maintained that that was not a raw image from that spacecraft. It was a second-generation copy to which things had been done. Now, JPL actually admits on its website that they did a little more to it than they admitted 3 years ago. There's another line where they've added an additional filtering that they used on this. So my simplest hypothesis, you know, Occam's razor, is if I find English letters, because the Arabic alphabet is the English alphabet, it's the one we write with every day. If I find English letters on a photograph from Mars, it ain't Martians. The odds are it's terrestrial people.
I was going to call them Occam's razor on my side of the argument. Because
well, it's more likely they're on Mars?
It's more likely, unless we have absolute proof that somebody, after all, Richard, you've got to admit, it would be a little weird for somebody to put Arabic lettering late at night on some photograph.
Not at all, because in the model, you know, remember, we have honest folks and we have dishonest folks in this storyline.
Right.
And somebody, you know, my model was, and this is 3 years ago, that somebody who was honest, working either at JPL or Mail-In Shop,
yes,
was so affronted by what was going on, that this image had been so distorted and misused and you know, basically hoaxed.
Yes.
For the world to see, and then Dan Rather to basically say, it's just a pile of rocks and all the other things.
Yes.
That they put these letters on as a whistleblowing signal that the things are fake.
I don't reject that. I don't reject it.
But it's the more likely hypothesis.
Well, the way I looked at the whole story tonight with these photographs, which people are going to go, oh my God. And knowing the supposed chain of custody, I'll give you that, huh?
Thank you.
That either way, it's a monstrous story. Either
keep in mind the missing 36 hours.
Yeah, I am. Either the stuff is really on Mars, which would demand that Malin go back and take more photographs right now.
Absolutely.
Of the same exact area.
And you put your finger on a key test. Because if he was to do that and not keep them, but as soon as they were downlinked, put them up immediately.
What if it really is there, Richard?
Well, then we go to the next level, which is how do Arabic letters get on Mars millions of years ago? but you see, the simpler explanation is they're a fake to tell us that the image was a fake. And remember how important this image was. The whole world is waiting on the edge of their chairs, where they're holding their breath, turning blue, waiting to see if the damn face on Mars is really a face. And they take the worst picture at the worst angle with the worst lighting, with the worst processing.
It's amazing.
The worst time of year.
It's amazing, Richard. Just amazing. And I wish Occam was here to judge.
Let's do a poll. The rest of the evening, why don't we have folks call in and just vote. Just say which they think is more likely, that they're on Earth because it was a hoax.
No, Richard, trust me. Let's not do that. We have too much to talk about. Let's have them vote by email.
All right.
They can look at the photos themselves, and they can vote by email.
And then you'll announce, like, tomorrow night what they say.
Yeah. I'll give you a good, clean, honest percentage.
That's in question. Come on.
Do you think these letters are some sort of conspiratorial nod of the head saying, look, all of this this we're doing right now is a hoax and crap, and so we're putting this in so you're sure that's what it is? Or do you think it really might be on Mars? And if you might add in your response, folks, which you think would be the bigger story? It's hard to imagine. Now, Richard, why did you hold on to this for 3 years?
Yeah, this is the important part of the story. I held on to it because I gave my word. When I was grappling with how to bring this up on your show,
yes,
because it obviously is a significant discovery. By the way, we should tell everybody that there's no question the letters are real. They have been verified by Mark Carlotto. The imaging people have looked at the pixels.
Sure.
Your pixel people can go and look at them.
I know.
No, they're really there. The only question is, which side of the planet did they get put on? On the Mars side or the Earth side?
That's right.
But they're on the digital original, so-called, on the JPL website.
They're really there.
There's no mechanics involved, no prints, no paper prints, no darkroom stuff. They're digitally on there in a way that is very, very
serious. This is a monstrous story. Monstrous.
It is huge, because either way, it's a huge story. You're absolutely right. The reason I sat on them is because a few nights after I'd found them, as I'm groping with how to bring this out, I got a call from Tom Van Flandern, who, as you know, is the former head of the mechanics branch at the Naval Observatory, He did a press conference a few days ago. We can talk about that.
I tell you what, we don't have time to develop this properly. Hold on. Stay right there. We'll get to why he held these for 3 years. These are amazing photographs, and he held on to them for 3 years. So there's got to be a good story here. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
She's got something to prove my soul. She knows I'd love to love her, but she lets me down every time. Can't make her mind, and she's no one's mother. Tonight with me, she'll be so inviting. I want her all for myself.
Take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Y'all just got to trust me when I tell you, if you can get access to a computer, go run into it now. Go to my website, www.artbell.com. Go to the program section. Tonight's guest, Richard C. Hoagland, first hour. The D&M photographs. Take a look. There is no question about what's there. The only question is, how did it get there? And there are only two answers to that question. One is, they were there when they took the pictures. The implications of that are obvious. The other is, somebody decided to put Arabic there and broke the chain of custody of the photographs. Either one of those two answers, if what we see is what we see, is an incredible story. All right. So now we get to this part of it. I think it's important, and Richard has some splaining to do. He held on to these photographs for 3 years. Right, Richard?
Yes.
3 years. That's a long time for something this incredible. So how did that come to pass?
Well, because I gave my word to Tom Van Flandern a few days after I found them. And was wondering, what the hell, you know, the question you put is absolutely accurate. There's only two possibilities. They're on Mars, or they were done on Earth.
Yep.
Either one is huge.
Yep.
The question is, how do you go forward? How do you figure it out? How do you get to
the truth? The question is, why did you promise Tom?
Well, he called me up, and he said, you know, we were talking about the cat box and all the stuff we talked about on the air a lot. And then he said he had something really big. And it was like pulling, you know, hemstees to get it out of him. And finally he made me promise on a stack of monuments that I would never tell anybody, and that until he gave me permission, I could not breathe a word of it. And then he proceeded to tell me that another member of the science group he belonged to, SPSR...
See, he knows you. It's too bad. I mean, there's no way you're going to refuse with that kind of...
Of course not. When a friend comes to you and says, I'll tell you something, but it's in confidence, I mean, look, I'm old school. I grew up in my press side of my career with Walter Cronkite.
All right. I want to know next is, why did Tom not want it out?
Because he said that another scientist at SPSR had found them, and the timeline looked like he found them before I did. But more important, they wanted to put them in a paper, a peer-reviewed scientific paper, to walk in the front door at Nature... or Science. Nature was the preferred journal then, the most prestigious scientific journal in the world, and put them on the table along with a lot of other enigmas on the image to get a scientific debate started in the mainstream science community. And I thought that that was a good idea, but I argued strenuously that there had to be two roads to that. There had to be two takes to what they meant. One was, yeah, they might be on Mars, but the other is that they also might well be on Earth.
But why not just open it to the public and conduct a simultaneous investigation? Why hide it from the public?
This is where things get murky, and it pains me no end to say this, Tom, Art, but I guess I need to say this. I have since discovered in the last week that Tom Van Flandern, apparently, and his cronies back there have had a hidden agenda. And the agenda is to basically deep six any possibility that NASA and JPL could have covered this stuff up for 30 years. And they have been the stalking horse for the they can do no wrong, and if we find it, it's because they didn't really recognize it until just yesterday. And he has been very carefully cultivating me as a, quote, friend to try to get information out of Enterprise and our work that they could then use politically to other ends. And this all came to a head at this bizarre press conference that he held last Thursday at the National Press Club, where he didn't tell us until the last minute he was even going to do it, and then he took a whole bunch of work from a whole bunch of people, ourselves included, and paraded them in front of people in Washington without any attribution to where the original data had come from, which is the absolute, you know, worst sin you can do in the world of science. You have got to reference and attribute other people's work. I think that we're dealing here with a potential stalking horse for the agency itself, for that group in NASA. Remember, most of NASA, 18,000 people, is honest. But there is a tiny group that has been manipulating this issue for over 20 years. And I think Van Flandern has fallen under the influence of that group. And it's like, you know, he got me to promise not to do anything with these because they're so politically explosive. And then they just sat on them for year after year after year until finally he debuted them himself last Thursday at this press conference, which, of course, has freed me from my promise. And now an appropriate investigation can go forward.
Damn, Richard. Wow.
And I feel really bad because I'm the one that promoted him for your show. I put him on this show. I supported his science. He has a stunningly accurate, critically important model, the exploding planet hypothesis. It will be proved ultimately to be correct. It is a huge part of the hidden Mars story. But what I've also found is that there has been an agenda for the last 3 years, and I can't reveal some sources on that yet, where Mr. Van Flandern has been trying to basically take over the Sidonia investigation and make himself the catbird in the catbird seat to the exclusion of a lot of other people, including our own work.
And if I had Tom here now, what would he say, do you think?
He would say that, you know, there are honest people in NASA and that we can't prove conspiracy and cover-up and we don't want to damage reputations, and it's bunk. You know, this is not an academic exercise. This is for all the onions. This is for the heart and soul of the human race. If there really are beings who built things on Mars, who might be our lineal ancestors, who in fact might have, as he is proposing,
yes,
put letters on the planet that are connected to our own alphabet, which is an astonishing idea if it's true, then you can't pussyfoot. You can't timidly walk around and not look at the people who are deliberately, like Mike Malin, not telling us the truth. Mike Malin, the night of that press conference a week ago on April 5th, the third anniversary of the cat box image, put another 10,230 images out on the web that he'd been sitting on for about a year. And three more shots around the face on Mars, except Art, he can't seem to hit it. He's like those, you know, stormtroopers in the Star Wars movies. You know how the safest thing to be on the Star Wars movie was somebody not in a green suit,
right.
A white suit?
Yes.
Because the other guys couldn't shoot.
That's right.
Well, Malin keeps taking pictures all around the face, and we've got a mosaic up on the web tonight. If you go to enterprisemission.com, you will see a story called Letters from Mars at the very top. Mm-hmm. By the way, right under it, there is a link to the PAX television network. Our show is now up on the official lineup.
Don't forget to remind me. The date again, please.
April 27th, Friday evening, 3 weeks from tomorrow night. We will have a one-hour special on the PAX television network with all the people, including Van Flandern. He's going to be represented, you know, on that special with his various ideas, basically the history of the Sedoni investigation to date, including Arthur C. Clarke's provocative comments. And I've got another one for you tonight. Anyway, before we close this out, I want to...
You know, what you have said is so serious, Richard.
I think that meeting... Remember, there was a meeting at NASA headquarters in the fall of 97. And then Flanner was there, David Webb was there, DiPietro was there, Mark Carlotta was there. I think that covers everybody. Oh, and McDaniel. And at this meeting, where nobody else was allowed in, I wasn't invited. You know, I certainly kept me 5 light years away.
Yeah.
There was a conversation. And the guys came out afterwards representing that NASA looked very seriously at this and was going to take new images of Sedonia. And nothing happened, nothing happened, nothing happened. And you know and I know and the few million people who listen to us over our shoulders know that it was this audience and the faxes they sent to Dan Golden and those emails and the copies to all the networks that got those pictures taken 3 years ago last week. Well, I have a feeling, I can't prove it, I've got one first-hand report from one of the participants that I can't disclose, but there were some promises made in that meeting that I think the American people need to know about. And what happened is the behavior of each of those participants after they came out of that meeting completely changed. People who would talk to us wouldn't anymore. People who had written books claiming that NASA, with documentation, had been covering up on Mars for 20-some years, on your show, recanted them. Remember that?
Yes.
I mean, a bizarre series of evidence. So if I was a district attorney and I was looking to a key point in time when everybody went weird, when they went south on the crime being committed, which is a cover-up a la Brookings, of the greatest discovery in the history of the human race, I would focus on what happened at that meeting and who was promised what and what they have done since.
All right, Richard, I don't think you're in much communication with Tom, are you, right now?
Well, I have not talked to him for a week.
All right. If he wants to answer this and wants to engage you publicly on this question, are you willing to do it?
Sure.
Okay. Just wanted to get that out of the way. I really think it's important that he be able to explain why he would want to keep these bundled up for 3 years by making you promise in such a absolute way that you wouldn't release them. I really want to understand this, and that may be one way.
I have a very weird character flaw about me. When I give my word to a friend,
I stick to it. I know you do. I know you do. And I know you feel violated to be able to release this now, or you, obviously you wouldn't. So,
well, I feel really sad because this is not the way I would like things to turn out.
Okay. Well, that invitation's up then. And
Let me switch to something much more fun.
Okay.
Our friend Arthur.
Arthur C. Clarke. Sir Arthur C.
Has been up to it again. Well, come on. I've known him 30 years. I can call him Arthur, all right? He sent an email last Saturday, which was the launch of his spacecraft to Mars. Remember, we're going back to Mars, and on Saturday morning at 11:02 Eastern Time, 2001 Mars Odyssey, which NASA has officially named after my good friend, got it off to Mars, right?
Right.
And apparently it's the best launch they've had. The spacecraft has no problems. They're all grinning. It looks like it's going to really, it's going to do some amazing things. When it gets there, and we'll do other shows about what it's going to find, but we have some specific predictions about what the instruments on this spacecraft are going to find.
What do you think the odds are of it successfully getting there?
Oh, I think they're 100%.
Well,
remember, this is 2001.
A lot of trouble, though, with Mars stuff.
Yeah, but is it real trouble, or is it more of this conspiracy fake trouble?
Well, I don't either way. It's
trouble. As long as you have the heavy hand of conspirators keeping us from knowing the truth, there's not a pure science road that you can travel. And unless you can get rid of that aspect of this problem, you're never going to get to the bottom of things.
Well, I agree. I mean, what's on the photographs, it's undeniable. Chain of custody, we know about where you think something might have happened, we know about. But no matter how many times you roll this over in your mind, it's a big damn story either way. Either they are screwing with the pictures, as you said, seriously so.
Yep.
Or it's really there. Take your pick. I'm not sure which is the bigger story.
If instead of following the Van Flandern path 3 years ago, when you know, remember, any case that you let get cold, it's harder and harder to get to the truth, right?
Right.
if we had followed the Hoagland path, which was I would have put this stuff out, and I would have absolutely put both models on the table. They're on Earth, they're on Mars. Let's find out. We would have gotten mainstream reporters. John Holliman was still alive. Remember John, our friend back then at CNN?
Of course.
He would have absolutely flown out to Malin's shop, sat down with Malin and said, now how the hell do you explain this? There would have been discussions. There maybe would have been a committee. I mean, who knows? You might have even gotten John McCain interested early on in the politics of this. The truth would have fallen out. No matter where the truth lies, we would have found it. But now the trail is cold. The only route we have is that missing gap, that 36 hours.
These photos will warm it up,
I would hope.
Warm up.
And maybe there's a guy that worked for Malin, or maybe there's a guy or a gal at JPL that is an honest, patriotic American and was so incensed with what was going on, what they saw happening, that they took the opportunity to sneak these things in down on the DNN, which I've called the Rosetta. I mean, the humor here is the irony here is absolutely rife. Because the DNN is the Rosetta Stone in the classical model of the Rosetta Stone, which was the key to decoding Egyptian hieroglyphs, you know, back in the 1700s. So to stick these letters on the DNN, which mathematically is the code key to breaking Mars, is, again, a level of humor which should not escape everybody. And somebody, maybe somewhere, there is a patriotic American tonight who's just waiting for a press person to say, how do those letters get on that image?
Yeah.
And then they'll tell the truth. Let me turn to Arthur now.
Yes, yes.
This email is pretty cool. He sent this a couple days ago. I would like to send my very best wishes to the 2001 Mars Odyssey team. I hope that you have better luck than the Russians. Because the Russians lost their Mars 96 mission.
I recall, yes.
I expect you all seen the Planetary Society's Visions of Mars CD, which should have been taken there, and is at the bottom of the Pacific tonight, by the way. He goes on, I still hope the future colonists will have a chance of enjoying it. Our knowledge of our exciting little neighbor has certainly increased enormously since the far-off days when Ray Bradbury, Bruce Murray, and I met at JPL before the Viking launch. And Carl Sagan was also there, I should add. Next paragraph. I'm fairly convinced, this is Clark now, I'm fairly convinced from recent images that there is vegetation on Mars. And I wouldn't be surprised if you find something even more exciting. Now, what's more exciting than vegetation? Are we talking herds of Martian buffaloes stampeding across the pictures here?
Large life, Richard.
Yeah, finally, then says, however, I won't believe in any Mars artifacts until I can read their number plates. Go ahead and find them. Well, Arthur, we've got some number plates on the ArcBell website at Enterprise tonight. Now, is that between the lines or what?
Not that very far between the lines. No, it's it's clear that Sir Arthur Clarke has gone through a metamorphosis.
It's 2001, Art. I mean, my take on Arthur.
Do you think that he was waiting for 2001, or do you think, Richard, that he just had his epiphany, recently?
No. Remember, I've known this man a long time. He is a brilliant genius. He is as sharp now at 84 as he was when I met him 30-some years ago. No, this is part of their plan. This is part of why they were telling us about 2001. It's time. And I think, and I'm going to put in the new version of Monuments that we're almost ready to put out, some thoughts about him and me and Kubrick, which we've never put on paper before. But I think this is part of a plan, part of the disclosure plan. Not the cover-up crowd, but the get-it-out-there crowd. And I see Arthur is having a wonderful time. I mean, that email is dripping with his classic humor.
Yes.
But it's going right to the point.
It's all so very interesting, isn't it?
Isn't it cool?
Yeah.
I mean, on the upside, look at the extraordinary things we're about to experience. When this mission, when his mission, and I'm going to call it that from now on, why not, gets to Mars in October and finally gets into the proper orbit at the end of December, we could have the most astonishing Christmas present because it carries an exquisite color camera with like 15 or 20 different spectral bands.
God, I hope it makes it.
And if there is vegetation, they will find chlorophyll.
Absolutely.
And there will be no doubt from the science itself that we've got vegetation on Mars. Now, See, Arthur's not a dummy. He knows what he's saying because there can't be vegetation on the current Mars that NASA's given
us. You know, you've got to admit, from Arthur's perspective, Christmas 2001 would be...
Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, that'd be just the right time to have that kind of news delivered from his point of view.
And it's coming. Okay. And I'm telling you, this one's going to make it. This mission cannot, will not, must not disappear.
Well, I don't know. I've done shows with Richard before where something or another disappeared, and it's always some godforsaken thruster reason or burn up or, you know, atmospheric expansion or anything can happen. So, knock on wood, Richard. We want to know. Listen, my friend, thank you.
Okay, Art.
And talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Till next time.
Yeah. Good night.
These dreams are made of the end. Who am I to disagree? I travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody is looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused.
Tonight, we're going to talk about the shadow people. Finally. Now, this will be a big switch of gears from what we just did in the last hour, a great big one, so mentally reset yourself, because we have a honest-to-God serious phenomena. Actually, I've got about three or four of them going on right now. But the shadow people came first. Oh, did they ever come first? So, we're going to get down to that in a moment. Let's take care of biz first. Stay right where you are, then we'll set this up. Are you... I don't even remember now. It was... Oh, it was at least a week and a half ago, I had a caller who said, Art... I see shadow people. You know, like, I see dead people. I see shadow people. And that began a chain of events that's leading to the show that we're just now going to do. I think we all have experienced this. Well, maybe not. Maybe not all. As you know, I began the program Dreamland years and years and years ago. And I wrote the intro to Dreamland. You remember the intro to Dreamland? You remember things seen in the corner of your eye, peripheral vision? Well, I put that in there because it's one, to me, has always been one of life's great unexplained mysteries. There seem to be things that you will see moving in your peripheral vision every now and then. I mean, it's just like, what the hell was that? It moved. And you look, and there's nothing there. Well, that's why I put that into the intro of Dreamland. And now, we got the call, what, a week and a half ago, I said, something like that. And the person said, you know, Art, not only do I see them from the corner of my eye, but I'm beginning to see what I call shadow people clad in dark garb, with usually, you know, with some kind of a cover over their head, a shroud or something. And I'm seeing them straight on, Art. Well, that began the avalanche. I got no less than 4,500 people bothered to sit down and email me long stories of what they've been seeing. Here's just a little sample. Art, I know you've received thousands of emails regarding the shadow people, but here's another one. I've seen what I could only describe as black outlines shaped like people at night, almost always in a semi-sleeping state. They've terrified me since I was 10 years old, and I'm 35 now. First time I saw them, I was 10 years of age. There were four of them in the room. I panicked, tried to run out of my bedroom, and kept flinging myself against my bedroom door, trying to push it open when it opened to the inside. This happened in the middle of the night, and my poor mother wanted to take me to a therapist when it repeatedly occurred. Once, after rearranging my bedroom furniture, I saw one and got up to run out of the room and ended up in my closet instead. Wrong door. Needless to say, this has been rather disconcerting to my mother, ex-husband, and current husband. Since I was a child of 10, my mother would come into the room because I was screaming in the middle of the night. She said my eyes were open, I appeared awake, but I was incoherent, terrified. First time I read Whitley Strieber's Transformation, I began to wonder if I was perhaps being visited by aliens. So, and it goes on and on. It's a long story. Or, dear Art, I can't help but write this email to you. The subject has plagued me my entire life, and until I heard your program last week, I had no name for my, in quotes, difficulties. During my childhood, even from birth, my parents and friends noticed that I knew things or saw people that no one else saw. At nighttime, I remember sitting in bed and holding conversations with people inside my bedroom. They'd come to me, and sometimes while sitting on my bed, they'd talk to me. Now, as an adult, I would be skeptical of this story if I didn't actually have proof from my parents who heard the conversations. My mother particularly remembers seeing me sitting straight up in bed talking to someone and listening as a man answered me. These visits came constantly, and of course, there were the positive and friendly visitors and the ones that would cause me to scream and become a horrible insomniac for 6 months at a time. I remember these people so vividly, the good, the bad. I can still see them in front of me. And it goes on and on and about the encounter and on and on. And as these go on and on, 4,500 emails, folks. Here's another one from Susan. It was no surprise when I heard on the Art Bell Show about the shadow people. I haven't seen one face to face, but I've lately been seeing out of the corner of my eye that which quickly disappears and a very definite presence standing behind me, and when I turn around, there's nothing there. I mentioned it to a friend of mine who's from Cuba about Art Bell's program on the shadow people. And before I even had a chance to tell him about the program, he blurted out, "I forgot to tell you, I saw one of them." He then went on to describe how he'd been sitting at the computer practicing sending digital photos to his brother, who was in the same area, Anaheim, when he felt someone in the room with him. He had just sent a photo and turned around to see a being in the shape of a human, although not very tall, covered all in black, except for the eyes, which he said were red and round. He said it had what appeared to be two arms, two legs, and not very tall. When he disappeared, the computer at the same simultaneously malfunctioned, he adds. And I could just go on and on. You're getting the idea, right? Art, my name is Jonathan. 17 years old, I'm in Sarasota. I prefer not to give my last name. A few years ago, I started seeing shadow people. Didn't know what to make of it at first, until they actually began to talk to me. When I told my parents, they sent me to a doctor to see if there was something wrong with me, Art. The doctor found nothing. Since then, the encounters have gotten worse. The beings tell me things I don't understand. Sometimes I can understand a few words and actions. They seem to have human emotion. And from what I've seen, they show anger, sadness, frustration, depression. When I first started seeing them, there was one that stood out from the rest. I noticed The others don't talk to him as much, and I have no idea why. Most of them display average human size. Their speed is unreal. I've seen them race across my room so fast that I can't even see them. They don't walk. They glide like birds. They make no sound except voices. Art, I'm not crazy. I can't deal with it anymore. I can't talk to anyone about this without them thinking I'm crazy. Tonight on your show, please bring up the shadow people. Well, this was some time ago. Please read my email. Please give me some information on the subject so I can find a way to get rid of them. Thank you, Jonathan. So, there, a little sample for you. Okay, and I've got about 4,497 more I could read to you. I won't do that, of course. I tried to pursue somebody who could talk about this, who would know something about it, and I have found Thunder Strikes, and we'll see what he's all about. Thunder Strikes is a Twisted Hairs elder and a Nagual leader within the Sweet Medicine Sundance path. His diverse background in ceremonial medicine, comparative religions, psychology, ancient mystery school traditions, and the martial arts contributes to his remarkable skill as a contemporary shaman. Descended from the Eastern Cherokee and Irish parents, that means he's Mate, he's half and a half, Thunder Strikes was guided from a very young age by his grandmother, Spotted Fawn, a Cherokee medicine woman. His early training motivated him to seek excellence in many arenas. Accomplished in the martial arts, he was inducted into the Martial Arts World Hall of Fame in 1994. Wow. As a teacher, shamanic counselor, and healer, he inspires and enriches the lives of many apprentices and students worldwide. He is author of the book titled Song of the Deer, along with Jan Orsi, one of his apprentices. Here is Thunder Strikes. Thunder Strikes, welcome.
Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you. You are Mate, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
You're half and half.
As we say in Texas, a good old breed.
A good old breed, huh? All right. But you were sort of brought along by your grandmother.
Yes, my mother's mother was a very, very powerful medicine woman, and especially herbalist. And, in fact, even the local medical doctors when I was a kid would come to her when they couldn't figure out what to do with themselves. And I was about the only grandchild that really had any interest in what she was doing. And so, you know, she'd go out and say, well, here's, you know, these maggots, their grandmother Earth's little surgeons, and she healed one of the wealthy men in town's son from deafness by putting them inside his ears and packing them with a black walnut poultice and things that seemed very bizarre. And I thought, well, this is not so bizarre. This is Grandmother Earth. This is nature. And I just kind of hooked into it. And one thing led to another, and I stayed with it.
Why and why do you know? How do you know about you heard me read those emails,
yes, I
right?
did. I found them very, very intriguing.
All
and,
right.
I think I've definitely, in fact, I know I've definitely got some answers for some of these people. To do so is quite interesting. So the first thing I need to say, Mr. Bell, is that I came into this journey and in learning about knowledge from these elders that are called Twisted Hairs. And the center of that elders group are a group of very, very old and wise men and women that are called the Zero Chiefs. They spent their time studying the universe, studying the mysteries of the universe, discovered the sigma value of nine, and really unveiled the true nature of zero, the universe. They were talking about dark matter and black holes and what have you before science was even invented, much less, you know, went that direction.
No doubt, using some other kind of language.
Yes, using basically what's called Haasalagi, which means it's a root derivative going back to the Olmec, the Mayan, the Aztec, all the way up into the Cherokee. See, basically, there's only two root languages in Native American language, and that's Anishinaabe, which say they came from the stars, and the Athabaskan, which say they came from out of the lower worlds, like the Hopi and the Navajo and so forth, are actually the Diné, which is their true name. And I was fortunate enough to study with a man, Grandfather Tom Wilson, who since passed over. That was the pseudo-name that was used in Carlos Castaneda's books, Don Genato, and or Hinato.
No
And that was my teacher. He adopted me as his grandson. I studied with him for close to 40 years. And he was a Grand Nagual, which means really a shaman. And by the way, we say shaman instead of shame because there's no shame in being a shaman. So that's the way we pronounce it instead of shaman, although I know it's the most accepted pronunciation. And grandfather, that's what I referred to call him, was a tremendous man of wisdom and knowledge. And to be blunt about it, I had to go and get permission. So actually, we're doing something very exclusive. I've never really sought a lot of publicity. I do my medicine dance. I share with people
no, I know. It's like
what I know.
Pulling and teeth, actually, to get you... to get to you.
Yeah.
And I know you don't seek publicity.
No,
I know that's true.
For the first time I ever have, actually. So
you had to get, now, let
I
me
had
get
to get
this
permission
straight.
From the Council of Elders, from these Twisted Hairs, to talk about the Shadow People. Because the first time that they recorded the incidences of the Shadow People was in 1153 B.C. And this organization, by the way, goes all the way back thousands of years before Christ, and they were originally called the Rattlesnake School, and they formulated themselves in 1253 B.C. In Oaxaca, down in the Yucatan. And I thought a lot this week. I thought, oh, boy, great. You know, here's the first time I decide to really do anything public, and I'm supposed to speak about something that I have been told not to talk about. Until the timing was right.
So when I really am curious. When you went to the elders to try and get permission to talk about this publicly, what kind of reception did you get?
Well, interestingly enough, what are called the Nagual Lineage Group, which is basically the eight elders that give me permission to teach anything that I teach, and I don't share anything in these wheels and keys and teachings that they have not given me permission to do so. And it's a matriarchal society, so it's primarily eight grandmothers that are very, very, very tough grandmas.
Was there any opposition?
Yes, there was. And their concern is based around what's called the Rainbow Bridge Prophecies, which were written just approximately 22,000 years ago. And in our current calendar dating, it runs somewhere from 1980 to the year 2000, was considered to be what they call the Awakening. And then a quickening begins January of this year and runs to 2012, where the Mayan calendar ends, of course. And
You did say quickening.
Yes. And the quickening is the time period in which, if I want to use, you know, I'm trying to use language so I don't have to go back into my root language. If I use the terms karma and dharma, the awakening was the period from 1980 to 2000. In which the majority of the people were going to discover the reality that they choose their lessons before they come here. They use 80% of their free will in choosing their life, writing their book of life, and they come here to learn what they've come to learn. When we finish that series of incarnations, then we switch over and we go to another stream. We go to the Dharma stream. And in the Dharma stream, that's where we have opportunity. There's not any real lessons to learn. There's just opportunity. And it's a whole new cycle of life. So the quickening is now occurring. People are stepping into Dharma. And the prophecies say that there are eight horses in this race. The goat horse is one that carries the vision of individual, autonomous freedom by the ability to assume authority, emotionally and mentally,
right,
to take responsibility physically and sexually, and most importantly, to stand spiritually accountable for the next seven generations. A lesson, by the way, that I think our national and national leaders could well use, starting with Clinton first. Mm-hmm. But we don't have too many leaders today that are giving us any kind of an example of real benevolent wisdom in leadership.
Huh.
And
no, we don't.
I mean, none. I see so few that it's just heartbreaking. You know, where are the Teddy Roosevelts? Where are the people that could really lead from the
front?
Well,
see, the problem is that they didn't get to where they are by being benevolent.
Exactly.
They got to where they are by stepping over bodies.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of what we call the Dark Horse Prophecy. And part of that Dark Horse Prophecy is in the quickening that we stand on a razor's edge, And then I can put it in the exact words, that in the land of the eagle, which is considered to be the Americas.
The land of the ego, did you say?
Eagle.
Eagle. Eagle. Yes, yep. We're the eagle, right.
And
the ego.
In the land of the eagle, in the land of the lizard, which is basically South America, that there would come a time when the talking leaves of the land of the eagle would hang by a silver thread, the Constitution, and that there would be an election that would split the beast asunder, and that it would go in two separate directions.
Okay, listen.
And if it went into one direction...
Hold it. Mm-hmm. We are at the bottom of the hour, so
okay.
Just relax for a moment. You and I are going to talk about telephones for a second during the break, and we'll be right back. My goodness, he has a Ross Mitchell kind of bass in his voice, doesn't he? Pretty bassy stuff, pretty interesting stuff, and we're about to get there. We're going to talk about the shadow people, why we're suddenly beginning to see them in such numbers, or have we simply stumbled into something that always has been, or is it all beginning to quicken? I suspect the latter. I'm Art Bell. Good evening, everybody. Thunder Strikes is my guest. The subject is what we call the shadow people. He actually had to go get permission from the elders before he could talk to us about this, which is pretty interesting. And I guess we've got to understand where we are in prophecy to understand why we're seeing the shadow people now. That's conjecture on my part. I have no idea. We're about to find out. You know I can't resist, right? That is so appropriate for reintroducing Thunder Strikes. It's so appropriate. Welcome back. Thunder Strikes?
Yes.
Okay, you are there. Good. You have got one deep voice, don't you?
Yeah, that's a product of about 20 years in the Marine Corps.
The Marines do that to you, huh?
Yeah, especially when you become a gunnery sergeant and a drill instructor and those kind of things, and you're booming your voice out at the full volume, you know what I mean, out on the ground, and it definitely takes your voice.
Uh-huh, and I suspect a lot of it's natural. All right, what you're telling us right now, I presume, is it Cherokee prophecy? These periods of time that we're discussing?
It's actually twisted hair prophecy.
Twisted hair prophecy.
See, if you were to take, let's say you were Cheyenne, I was Cherokee, other brothers and sisters were different tribes, and for whatever reason we realized that we had both the religion of our people, the spiritual way of our people, but it just didn't work. It didn't give us enough answers. It didn't give us enough connection to the mysteries and to the things that we wanted to know in the realms of knowledge. So we would go and travel. We'd go travel to different tribes. We'd travel to talk to different people.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, we began to realize that, look, there was a lot more than one way to skin a cat here. There was a connecting link to the universe here that different people chose to approach in different ways. And so consequently, we would start looking for truth. We'd look for truth that works. And these gentlemen, these women... gradually started to meet each other, and they formed into what was called the Rattlesnake School. And interesting enough, they say the roots go all the way back to a planet called Osiria Canwea in the Canis Major constellation, and the dog star Sirius was their grandfather's son. And that they came here approximately 172,000 years ago, bringing with them an ark of the crystal skulls. And that's where the sum total of knowledge of the 11 planets with human life in our solar system, or our galaxy, we don't even have the right words for it, our universe. And with them, about 22,000 years ago, Mr. Bell, they wrote a prophecy called the Rainbow Bridge Prophecy. And it speaks of eight horses in a race. the horse symbolizing the carrying or the transportation of the philosophies and the belief systems and the core beliefs of a people. And that these horses were running, and they're running towards the date at which all the Native American Turtle Island people shut off their calendar, which is 2012.
That's the Mayan calendar.
Yes, sir.
End of the Mayan calendar.
Absolutely. And there's a reason why they shut it off on August 17th, 2012.
Why? What is
this? Because they see that we will develop into full human beings, humanity, humans in unity, and we will be teaching one another, sharing with one another, caring with one another, healing one another, loving one another, with individual autonomous freedom. But our number one enemy is ignorance, superstition, slavery, dogma. You know, the dark side.
The modern day is what you're talking about. And you say that this quickening, interesting choice of terms, selection of terms, began, did you say 2000?
Actually, 2001.
2001.
It actually started on midnight of 2001. That was the
that sounds just about right, actually. As I look at events that have occurred, it seems just exactly right that we took a little bit of a quantum leap at that point,
mm-hmm.
and events have been certainly quickening.
And
well,
see, I think that from 1980 to 2000, when we were in the awakening, you take this chronic stress fatigue syndrome malady that's going around. That was almost non-existent until approximately 83, 84, somewhere in there, when they first started diagnosing different cases. And that's right in the first 4 years of the awakening. And the awakening was moving over from one cycle, one pattern, one timing of life experience called karma, for lack of a better term. We call it shilimata, but let's just say karma because that's kind of a universal word. And stepped over into dharma, or what we call shilimadahe, see? And when we did that, the speed of life, the actual circle of life, which is we basically, our people say we go around the wheel of life once every, twice every 3 years. Well, in dharma, we go around that same life experience 13 times every 3 years. And all of a sudden, the speed, the pace, the timing, I mean, there's not a person I talk to that doesn't talk about how it just seems like time is moving so much faster.
Mm-hmm.
And that is indeed true. Humans' metabolism is speeding up. And that's why we're seeing more and more and more prevalence of the shadow people.
You mean the faster our metabolism becomes, the faster we're moving in some sort of spiritual sense, the more we're going to see of them? Is that true?
Absolutely. Because in essence, if you take every time we have a negative thought, every time we have a guilt, blame, shame, fear, anger, resentment, jealousy, envy, grig, greed, possessiveness, insecurity, resentment, we're projecting that energetic out of our luminosity, out of our soul being, our spirit, if you want to call it that, and into the ethers, into the universe.
So then you're basically, I think, saying that our negative emotions are what? Creating the shadow people? Feeding the shadow people?
They're completing the shadow people because they're basically inorganic beings.
They're completing the shadow people.
Yes, they're inorganic
the implication of that would be, though, that there's some force that's already in existence that we're completing with these negative emotions, but that there's some form there prior to our, what's the right word, completing its existence.
I would say that what we're doing is we're assembling them into our world of perceptual reality because they exist in a parallel dimension. Within the seven streams of reality, the seven streams or seven dimensions of reality, there are actually 72 parallel dimensions to either side that the Zero Chiefs discovered. And these include your fifth dimension when you're dreaming at night. And every night when you dream, you demonstrate what our people call the Laren, the energy-sensitive perceptions of awareness. You go to heightened awareness instead of normal awareness.
So you may be at your most sensitive when you're asleep.
Absolutely.
Most subject to perhaps being able to see these beings.
Correct.
Are they beings, by the way? Is that
we call them inorganic beings.
Inorganic.
The definition given in 1153 B.C. By the major zero chiefs that really started noticing the phenomenon in the young.
Inorganic.
Inorganic beings. And that they appear because they feed in a vampiristic sense. They feed off of our emotional chaos, our emotional discharge of energy.
So then you will excuse me if I get a little crude for you. I'm not as eloquent as you, but basically, if you were to see a shadow person a little more than in peripheral vision, it would scare the out of you, right? And
for example,
you're suggesting it would feed on that fright.
Yes, it will. And see, if you know anything about animals, and I'm not Dr. Doolittle, but I definitely have learned to communicate with animals over my life because we call the animals sweet medicine. And because they have a natural harmony and a natural balance and alignment, and you don't see a dog going to a psychotherapist to learn why it's not a cat. I mean, a dog's a dog and a cat's a cat. Well, we are animals. We're two-legged animals.
Sure.
But we have the potentiality to actually become a human being. And that's what we're in now. We're trying to learn to become human beings.
Are these inorganic beings sentient? In other words, are they conscious in the?
Oh yes.
Oh yes.
You got to realize that almost every form of everything inside what we call the sacred laws of creation or the evolutionary laws is that all forms of all things are potentially transformable into all forms of all other things, and energy once created cannot be destroyed. It can simply be altered in the essence of its energy expression, its energy form. So these inorganic beings are parallel dimensional beings, is the best way to refer to them, that are pulled into our dimension, especially through the dream time, and engage and interact with us. The reason they occur out of the peripheral division is because we need to pick them up with our other eyes. We have 10 eyes. We have 5 ears. We're much more complex than medical science recognizes. We've even got a third genetic spiral that we're just now playing with called the ETA, the Evolutionary Transformational Agent. We're a luminous being, and we have a tremendous capability of perception. The entire path in the things I study with the
Slow up again.
Mm-hmm.
I need to understand this. So I believe that you are saying that we're not really seeing these beings with our eyes. We're not seeing them...
Not with your normal awareness eyes.
Right. That we're seeing them with a, lack of a better phrase, a psychic eye, or an eye that is now, because the metabolism is moving faster,
mm-hmm.
It's the mind seeing it. I haven't quite put this together yet.
I can make it simple. Is it all right if I call you Art? I don't ever transcend on somebody. I stay in proper respect and gender and say Mr. Bell.
Well, for the purposes of doing this tonight, can I call you Thunder?
Yes.
Okay.
Either that or just Gunny, because that's what I went by for so many years. Either one works for
me. Or I guess I could call you Strikes, but that doesn't sound right.
Right.
Thunder.
And everybody calls me either Thunder or Gunny, those that really know me closely and intimately.
Gunny, huh?
If I said to you that you not only have your left and your right eye, your normal awareness eye, but everyone's very aware of the third eye, which is in the forehead. But when you're asleep and dreaming at night, do you not see, and in fact, we describe dream time as rapid eye movement. Your eyes are moving, but your eyelids are closed. So how is it possible? What are you seeing with? Well, that's the fifth eye, which approximately is in the top of the soft spot of a baby's head when it's born.
Is it really?
Yes, that's your dream eye. All right? You also have a fourth eye, which is behind the base of the umbilical gala, which is at the base of the spine, and that's your animal eye. That's why your hair stands up in the back of your head when you have a reality sense of danger.
I've been there, done that.
You bet. And we also have an eye in the palm of each hand, which has been depicted in many, many, many magical and spiritual texts. We also have an eye in the sole of both feet. And most importantly, we have our universal eye, which is in our navel, our womb.
Really?
And so we have 10 eyes, and we have 5 ears. We have an internal ear that hears when we're in the dream time. And by the way, dream time is 144:1 to our time, to third dimensional time. If you put a person in dream research, like at Duke University, You measure a dream during rapid eye movement. We know they're dreaming. We record it on all the machines. We wake them up, and they tell us an event that took 2 weeks of time transition in their dream space.
Thunder, I've got emails from, for example, where not just one person, but as many as three or more saw the same shadow person doing the same
thing. Actions.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely correct.
Really?
Because, see, I'm sure you're aware you've had Rupert Sheldrake on, and he's referred to me in some of his books. Rupert knows the morphogenetic field theory, and I think it's one of the most brilliant theories to...
Were the shadow people, Thunder, ever alive? Were they living human beings? That's
not in our world in this third dimension as we know it. They've always been present in our dream time in fifth dimension. They've always been present in the three parallel dimensions to the right and to the left of our awareness.
You seem to be suggesting that they are vampires. Emotional.
I would say they are energy, and we call energy Arendi, to cover all forms of energy. They are Arendi vampires.
Oh. So, there's nothing particularly positive from our point of view about their presence. Is that right?
I don't like to use positive and negative, but I will use good and evil.
Well, if they're feeding on the negative emotions, whatever negative emotion might be present, that suggests to the average person that if they're seeing them, probably that's not such a good thing because there must be a lot of negative emotions flying about, right?
That's correct, but now let's take it another line of premise that if I'm getting rid of and giving away my negativity and it can be absorbed very much like a maggot, which is kind of revolting and repulsive for some people, you realize that you could put a maggot inside someone's ear that's got a huge abscess. It will leave away all the rotten flesh and not touch the actual living vital tissue of the eardrum. You take them out, and their grandmother is little surgeons. So are they dark? Yes, because they feed off of that energy. Are they necessarily a part of evil? It takes a wide stretch of the imagination and a tremendous amount of fear to see them that way. You can learn.
I can muster up that much fear, no problem.
Yes.
I mean, when you see a dark being and you can't account for his presence, it's not that hard to be that afraid. I mean, a lot of the people that have written me emails on this subject,
they're terrified.
Well, look, some of them have been in tears, writing in tears, because they've seen these beings all their life. Nobody ever said a word about them. All of a sudden on my program, here we are talking about them. They were literally in tears because they've been holding on to this.
And thinking they're crazy.
All their life. Well, yeah, I guess, you know, maybe. Thinking they're crazy, scared to talk to anybody else about it, scared to even admit it to their loved ones.
Well, let's deal with one thing, the fear. Fear is nothing, Art, but the unknown. And it never will be anything but the unknown. It always has been the unknown, and there's only one solution to the problem of the unknown. Make it known as quickly as possible. So,
good with that.
Fear is a natural state of the human because of the molding, the sculpting, the armoring of the image makers and the people that are significant, you know, reflections to us. And we develop fears that are frequently totally ungrounded. And these inorganic beings, these shadow entities or beings, which we call shadow people because it's the closest thing to, in our normal awareness that we can identify with.
Sure.
Their truth is they're a little more like small human sort of bat-like figures. The description of the cloak that they see or the shroud. One person was very tuned in. They definitely have red eyes.
Why don't you make... Yeah, red eyes. Great. Why don't you make the leap to evil? I mean, if their food and the engine that makes them more visible is our own fear and negative emotions, then why not make the leap to evil? You wouldn't think they'd be up to any good collecting all those things.
Well, ask anyone that's dealt with them, have they hurt them? Have they attacked them in any way? You'll find out that they have caused themselves to hurt themselves. I mean, it's like a buddy I had in Vietnam that... was going off into the bushes to, you know, do his number, and a tiger came up on him. That will definitely shift your perceptual view of reality.
That should have popped the whole shadow family right into the jungle, right then and there.
And so, yes, but if you really look at it, they can be evil if you project your evil far enough.
All right.
Take these kids going off in school.
All right, Thunder, I want to get to that. Thunder, hold on. Because I want to say something before we run into the break at the top of the hour. I hope Keith Rowland is listening. Sorry about this, Keith. But somebody has sent me a fast blast that makes sense. Say Art from Glenn in Washington. How's about asking for some drawings of shadow people from the listeners who have seen them? That should be interesting. Gosh, Glenn, I agree. Anybody out there willing to draw a shadow person for us and then scan it and send it to Keith Rowland? What a really good idea. How would you do that? Well, you draw it. Do it quickly here. And then you email it to webmaster@artbell.com. I repeat, webmaster@artbell.com. Wouldn't it be nice to have some visuals of what it is that we're trying to talk about? This is not so easy, this discussion. It's real, though. Thunder Strikes is my guest, and I would really enjoy that. Duh, why haven't we done it before? Let's see what these creatures look like. Moreover, let's see if they're perceived the same way by a large number of people. How can we do that? Well, by having you help us out by drawing what you saw or have seen and sending it to webmaster@artbell.com.
Take a ride.
Totally interesting experiment. Why didn't I think of it? If we would just have some of you out there who have actually full-on seen these shadow people sit down and do a drawing for us of what you saw to the best of your ability, scan it, and send it to my webmaster. That's webmaster@artbell.com. That's how you send it. JPEGs are preferred, JPG files. We could then compare what people have seen. Isn't that a good idea? Get an idea of what people have seen. So those of you that have seen them full on, draw it, scan it, send it tonight, within the hour, let's say, to webmaster@artbell.com, and we will have an interesting experiment, won't we? Thunder Strikes is my guest. We're talking about shadow people. Stay right there. Back now to Thunder Strikes. And Thunder, pretty familiar name, I would say, for two who have just met, but we'll go with it. The maggot analogy that you made a little while ago would seem to imply, and here is where I want to ask, I think, an important question. Are these inorganic beings that we're discussing tonight, in a sense, doing us a favor by absorbing our negative emotions and feelings? Is that a positive thing for us, or is it simply a positive thing for them, and really all overall negative for us?
I think the best way to answer that, Art, would be that it's really a positive thing for them without a question and beyond a question of a doubt. Just like any parasite that feeds off of another animal. But if you look at, for example, any parasitic relationship, the host actually experiences some gain, but it's not enough to make up for the fact that the parasite will eventually take their entire energy. And that's what we're dealing with in this quickening. As our metabolism speeds up,
yes,
they become more present in our assembling of our world of a reality from how we're choosing to perceive our reality. And as we kick in these other eyes, if you were to imagine a luminous egg, you've got an elliptical surface, do you not?
Yes.
Due to refraction of light coming from both inside you, at what's called your assemblage point, outside your luminosity, you'll pick it up through the third eye, which is, or the fifth eye, which are both very, very tuned in and very sensitive to spiritual essence or presence of energies and entities and vibrations and spirits, both incarnate and disincarnate, that we normally do not see at what's called normal awareness. Therefore, the more we are in our dark side, the more we're dancing with the dark horse of evil, the more they're going to feed until they become strong enough to start appearing in our actual third-dimensional world with
straight-on vision. That's what we'll say. Now, I want to read you something. This just came in by fax from, it's from Michael Harns, let's see, Harsons Island, Michigan, is it? Harsons Island, I guess, Michigan. I had always thought, Art, I could see something moving past my peripheral vision at my parents' home. I thought it was lights from the road some 600 feet behind the home. At times, I thought I was seeing a misty gray image of an elderly woman. But then one night, my lab, his dog, was laying at my side and began a slow, guttural growl. Rising and moving toward the windows, I thought he was looking at himself, you know, as a reflection. His growl became louder and stronger as he would lunge forward and draw back. This went on for about 3 minutes as I tried to stop him, lunging forward. He got very loud and then made a final lunge and stopped instantly. After stopping, he then went up to the couch that was to the left of the window and with a very cautious step, smelled the seat cushion. This blew me away and gave me justification for the things I thought I saw time after time. I've never felt the feeling again. My dog also ceased that behavior. I haven't always had a dog. He was a stray I'd taken in. Most of my visions were pre-pet. So my question, Thunder, is, are these things that cats, dogs, other animals have been seeing for a long time?
They have always been aware of their presence. And anyone that has a cat, they don't like cats. And so generally, the cat will spot them. They don't want to be spotted. And consequently, the minute the cat tunes in, and if you've seen your cat walk across, and all of a sudden it's very obvious he's going on his little route. You know how nonchalant cats can be.
Oh, yes.
And they stop, and all of a sudden they very deliberately turn their head. You can bet your booty that they're focusing on an inorganic being.
Well, I do bet on that because I just had a big incident with one of my cats. I have three. And I talk, and the veterinarian that was top-notch veterinarian that we took this cat to, she said, cats have a very fast metabolism.
Totally fast.
Cats have, in fact, their system is so different from other mammals on the earth that they're almost—it's almost like magic. These are the vet's words.
They are magical.
It's magical, and she said it's not so easy to treat them, and you just never know what's going to happen. They're really in a class all by themselves.
Totally.
And
see, one of our teachings, Art, is that we're evolving to the human stage where our metabolism will start to speed up to the point of what you could almost call formlessness. If I said that, Jesus' resurrection was really his virgin birth, and that was the moment that he turned formless, came back in an appearance that Simon Peter would recognize and say, touch me as you knew me, I am as you knew me. But the virgin birth, that's resurrection, that's formlessness. The ability to assemble into your luminous egg or cocoon the physical body that would normally appear through the birth cycle in your next incarnation. We have that kind of power. And I just took a little jump out there, maybe on a sidetrack, and I apologize for that. But cats and a cat-like mind and a cat-like body is where we're supposed to be. So
it's where we're. You're saying it's where we're going.
Yes.
So we might as well get used to it because we're going to be seeing more and more and more of these shadow people until what?
And
one day they simply we're all part of one reality.
Yes. And we're going to be seeing other entities. Much of this UFO, the little gray people, and the lizard people, and so forth. Those they come from a dimensional planet that if you want to look at it as the Great Spirit's grand design, was the experimental phase. I mean, you know, our people don't approach the symbolism of a god. We approach it as the everything, the universe, the sacred creation, the Great Spirit.
Well, if the shadow people feed off negative energy,
yes.
Why are so many children that you wouldn't think would have that much negative energy?
Well, what do you say about a child that's 8 years old that kills his parents with a butcher knife?
What
about these kids going off in school and shooting each other, Art? We have a lot of evil in the world.
Yeah, that's...
And even in the young.
Yeah, that's...
If the only way they can step into Dharma is to come in and express that in one final blasphemous, you know, riot down the runway of life, then they're going to. And of course, that just draws this energy into a stronger and stronger morphogenetic field. And of course, that's why we want to look at the gold horse instead of the dark horse and start figuring out how to deal with our own dark side, our own shit. Well, even Jung referred to it as the shadow. And start approaching it from a place of understanding we can get rid of our dark side by the way in which we live our lives in relationship to other human beings. And that's what we're here for. This is a laboratory. This is a university. And I think we're here to grow and learn, and we're here to learn how to live together. And I'm not talking about integration. I'm talking about basically being able to live together in a gathering together circle in which we are proud of the differences. But the differences don't produce wars.
Richard in Berkeley, California, is saying, your guest is describing the published works of Carlos Castaneda. Everything from the term inorganic being to the luminous ball of light.
That is correct. Carlos also studied with Don Juan, who is another real good friend of Don Gennaro's, and that's not neither one of them's real name.
And you studied with?
Tom Wilson, which is his real name, and Jack Shockley was the real name for Don Juan. And I can prove it.
How should we accept the presence of these shadow people? If not fear, then how should we react to them? If we begin seeing them, what does it mean for us personally, and how should we react?
I think the first thing is that you should become aware. Awareness is a key to you know, knowledge and enlightenment. And so first you need to become aware of everything that's in your environment. You need to realize there's a lot more there than you normally perceive. Once you do, deal with your own dark side. Where are you going into negativity? Life is a choice. It's always been a choice. It'll always be a choice. The one thing that the human being can change in the world by himself is his attitude and his approach. Your attitude is your concept, your mindset to reality. You can change.
First time callers, area code 775-727-1222.
Negativity.
Well,
you know, it's like a little boy in a room and
Let's rephrase that, and let's just say not to be such a butthead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, I apologize for that.
No, that's all right. Plenty of people who fit squarely or roundly, if you will, into that category. Believe me.
Yeah.
But I just thought I'd save the children or something. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know why. It's late at night. They can handle the language.
Right.
Here's what I'm worried about. Thunder, when I look around me and I look at what's going on, we're speeding up all right.
Mm-hmm.
But the signs that I see around me are not that we're speeding in a positive direction.
I agree.
We're speeding straight to hell.
Yes.
That may be a little dramatic, but the environment around us is collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
Social civilization appears to be collapsing, as you just demonstrated with what a lot of children are doing now.
Right. Moral and ethical responsibility is collapsing.
All collapsing. Going in the wrong direction. The sun right now is really beginning to worry me a little bit. It's spitting at us like I've never seen it spit before. And by the way, the scientists have never seen it spit this way before either.
It's almost, a 68% increase in the solar flares in the last 3 years?
We're in a normal high, but we just had an event that And by the way, Telstar 4, folks, may have lost some transponders yesterday, where they may have gone to a backup satellite, and, in fact, the Dish Network lost some of their transponders. Because of solar stuff, I don't know. They won't say. Mm-hmm. I suspect. We just had another major X-flare, big mother of an X-flare. Mm-hmm. These things are coming at us one at... Anyway, all...
And they're speeding up.
All taken together, we're speeding all right, but I'm not so sure... I like where we're going.
I would totally agree with that.
Look at the weather. Look at the weather.
And see, that's part of the red horse. The red horse is about weather. The white horse is about technology. The gold horse is about human-to-human interaction. And the gold horse is about spiritual, you know, self-growth and development. And, I mean, we have to deal with all of those. And all of them are going faster and faster in the race. And right now the dark horse is way out in front.
Well, what happens...
About three lengths.
What happens, Thunder, if the dark horse wins the race?
Well, the end point of the dark horse prophecy is Civil War II in the Americas and World War III. When the land of the bear, which is considered to be Russia, the land of the weasel, which is the Middle East, and the land of the dragon, which is China... combined together as one allied unit against the land of the eagle and bring it down and rip its feathers from its existence.
That would be us, the eagle.
Yes, it would be. And look at what we're currently dealing with China. They're sitting in our back door in the Panama Canal. They have major control of six major harbors in the United States. When are we going to wake up? Our military has been downsized to the point where we couldn't even hold a strong DEFCON 2. If you're familiar with the DEFCON statuses, that means we could not launch what we had at the beginning of Pearl Harbor, and we were pretty weak then.
Well, you were in the service, what, a career?
I started out that way, and then I got blown out of a helicopter in the Tet Offensive, and that short of ended that.
Well, I was actually at Amarillo Air Force Base, and I picked up the red phone. We were a SAC base, and...
Right.
I picked up the red phone during the Cuban crisis and heard them announcing the rise in the DEFCON level.
Right.
I remember that.
That's something you remember vividly.
That was a hair-raising time, believe me.
Now, that's real fear.
Hair-raising. Yep, that's real fear, all right. And so the gray people or the dark shadow people must have been running around gathering strength like crazy, and every time, I suppose, a major event in time occurs, the assassination of a president of the United States, oh, my God, the outpouring of grief and fear and anger and negative emotions must just really pump these little inorganic things up.
It's like they run amok, very much like a cockroach or a rat will.
So the more we run amok, the more we feed them.
Correct. And that's why... I had to get permission to speak about this. We're reaching the point of the quickening, and the quickening includes the quickening of both good and evil. Now it becomes a real full-out race. If you watch the horse race, you know the jockey always gives them the spurs and the whip and quirt, and they move them right to the finish line that last, you know, quarter length. And that's what we're doing. We're in the last decade, the last 10 years, which is called the quickening. So it's that race to that final point. And that was so completely... in the arena of free choice, free will, that they didn't bother to extend the calendar past that point because they said either we will become human beings gathered together in circles of unity or we will create a civil war in the Americas and a World War III, and who knows where it'll go from there.
Maybe nowhere.
Precisely. And see, that's why I get so adamantly...
All right. When you went to the elders to seek permission to talk about this tonight, what was the in the Supreme Court? It would be the dissenting opinion. What was the dissenting side? Why did they feel perhaps the public shouldn't be told this?
The two dissenting votes out of the eight were both saying that normally this would have been brought to the forefront in 2004. That the election at that time is a critical turning point as to whether we'll go really to the dark or to the light horse. And that by putting this out ahead of time, it can be a detrimental effect on those people who live in the prey victim syndrome world. And there's only two kinds of animals, no matter whether it's a two-legged or four-legged or winged or whatever, and that's predators and prey. the key is that you can be both a malevolent predator, a criminal, or if you're, for example, a law-abiding firearms owner, you can be a benevolent prey, a predator. So if a woman is being attacked, raped, and assaulted, that's violence. And she shoots a man with a .357 Magnum, or better yet, a .45 Colt, that's force. And force controls violence.
Yes.
And passivity breeds it. So the passivity that can be launched by people's helplessness or frustration to deal with these beings could be out of timing. But since it's such forefront issue, they said, okay, go for it. It would not be present if the collective weren't demanding it. And so the vote was 6-2.
So the hope is that by telling people what these inorganic beings are, that they will begin to modify their own behavior, slowing
off. Gain some emotional balance and control. Stop projecting their pretense out to life and on to others. In other words, wake up and assume authority, take responsibility, and be accountable for your life as a choice.
Boy, that sure is easy to say
and difficult to do. I've spent my whole life trying to learn it, and I'm still getting, not too bad at it, but some days are better than other days.
That's for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Hold it right there. I'd like to go to the phones, because I know a lot of you have questions about these shadow people. Now, I think we just got quite a few answers, but I know you've got questions, and I hope that those of you with the capability are making the drawings, scanning them, and sending them to webmaster@artbell.com so we can all have at least some form of visual of what you've seen straight on. In the meantime, we're about to open up the phone lines. Don't touch that dial.
Spread the
sand, smell or touch the something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sand or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. All these things in our memories hold and they use them.
Certainly is. Good morning, everybody. We're speaking with Thunderstrikes, or if you wish, Gunny. He was obviously a gunnery sergeant. He's also a Twisted Hairs elder and Nagual leader within the Sweet Medicine Sundance path. He is Matei. He's half Eastern Cherokee and half Irish. And he knows about shadow people, and he's been telling us about shadow people, and I hope soon we'll get the first images on the website of what some people have seen and call the shadow people. And we've also got a lot of phone calls, so in just a moment, we're going to go to the phones with Thunder Strikes. Stay right there. Back now to Thunder Strikes, and I just before we go to the lines, I've got a question for you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Should I understand these beings to be, as we, many of us believe we have been, the creations of God, separate creations? Should I imagine them to be here since the creation, since man has walked the earth? Have they always been here?
No, sir, they have not. And in fact, that's why they were first brought into awareness. If you look at what was going on in approximately the 1100s B.C. here in the Americas, and that's when we first began to see, up to that point, there was very little tribal warfare. All right, very little. In fact,
you're saying before that there were no shadow people?
There were no entities created out of our own energy field that began to take on their own consciousness or perceptual consciousness of reality.
All right.
Now they're consciously present. We created evil ourselves, interestingly.
We created evil ourselves. So they are a creation, but not of...
Not of God. Not of the Great Spirit. We are determiners of energy.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
The mineral world's the holding world. The plant world gives. The animal world receives, and we're the determiners.
Do you, Thunder, happen to have a computer in the house?
Yes, I do.
So, in about 2 minutes, I'm informed by my webmaster that the first three or four drawings, that have been scanned that he considers interesting are going to be up there. Are you able to do that, or are you on the line that your computer would use to get on the Internet?
No, I can probably go into my computer, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, for the rest of you, as a matter of fact... very soon now, we're going to have it up on the website. And what you do is you go to a program, tonight's guest, scroll down to Thunder Strikes, and when Keith gets the drawings up there, in the next few minutes, you will all be able to look together and see what they are. So you might have, if anybody's assisting you there, Thunder, you might have them... get on my website and get ready. That's how you get there.
Go to your website and go to Thunder Strikes section.
Well, actually, to tonight's to program and then tonight's
program.
Then tonight's guest info.
Yes.
That would be you, and then you'd see the name Thunder Strikes.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my webmaster gets them up there, in the next 10 minutes at least,
okay,
we'll all be able to look together, and I'd be very curious what it is people have been seeing. In the meantime, I'd like to go to the phones. And I'm going to think about the fact that they're our creation. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Thunder Strikes. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
This is Sarah from Modesto, California.
Welcome.
Hello. I'm a fairly new caller. I commend Yard on the great job you're doing. I really love your show.
Oh, thank you.
Actually, I have a question because I have quite a few things that do happen to me, but this is like only the second time I've heard about this, and I'm really curious as to whether... this could be shadow people or ghosts that I'm experiencing, because I always just figured it was ghosts.
It might be hard to discern, yes.
Yes.
So what do you see?
Well, I haven't ever actually saw a person, but I do see outlines. I see a lot of movement, especially once it gets late at night and I'm on the computer. I see flashes of light by the corners of my eyes and shadows by the corners of my eyes.
They're moving?
Yes, definitely moving. And sometimes I'll think I see an outline, I'll turn, but... It fades, so I've never seen...
Well, that's as classic as it gets. What do you think, Thunder?
I think what she's seeing is that they're both incarnate and disincarnate spirits, which you might call ghosts, and then you're dealing with poltergeists, which are basically a phenomenon of... an interesting phenomenon of the projection of adolescence just coming into the age of puberty. And I think what she's seeing is... let me ask you this. Melody was the name?
No, Sarah.
Oh, what was your name?
Sarah.
Sarah.
Uh-huh. Sarah, when you saw their appearance, did you see them to the right side or to the left side?
Oh, geez.
More friendly? And can you give a basic description of the thing you were doing at the time? What was the event that you were experiencing at the moment?
Oh, geez, I'm trying to think. I think I see them from both sides. I honestly haven't ever really paid attention to that. But a lot of times it just happens late at night when I'm sitting at the computer. I notice a lot when I'm sitting at the computer.
Uh-huh.
And... usually only at night, and a lot of times lately, just the past few nights, actually, laying in bed, like, I'll see little flashes out of the corner of my eye, and I look, and nothing's
right
there.
Those sound like the shadow beings, or the shadow people.
Oh, no, I didn't want to hear that.
How old are you?
I'm 24.
24.
And, you know, if I could just ask a few other quick questions, occurrences, I mean, I've also, this, I don't know if this sounds strange at all, but I have... felt breathing in my face before. It's been a couple years since this has happened.
Breathing in your face?
Yes. I have laid in bed and actually felt breathing in my face. It's only happened like two or three times, and it's been a couple years since it happened. And
okay, those are not the shadow beings.
That's not a shadow being.
What those are is that you've got to realize that ancestor spirit being, loved ones that have crossed over to the other side, frequently come back, and because they assembled us into their world.
Uh-huh.
And then they have left our world, but we still have them assembled there. It's our heart space. It's our connection to them.
Oh, wow.
And so we can feel that breath of life, which is why it's so critical when a newborn takes their first breath of life. That's when their luminosity lights up, shall we say.
Oh, that's
And so
great.
That's what you're experiencing there. It's the inorganic beings or the shadow people, they definitely are attracted to electromagnetic energies.
So in other words, when you're near a computer?
Computers, television sets.
Yep, well, monitors, sure. They're electromagnetic. It's all electromagnetic. Right. Hun, we've got to leave. I'm sorry. We have now the first four drawings submitted by people who claim to have seen shadow people straight on. They're up on my screen right now. Oh, my. Oh, my. Now, these are people's drawings, of course, but wow. So, if I might ask, Shadow...
I've got them here, Art.
Shadow... Oh, you've got them?
Yes.
Okay, there are...
The first one...
Yes?
That's not a shadow being. That's what's commonly referred to as a Manitou.
A Manitou?
A Manitou is an evil dark force energy whose presence becomes known because it's inside your lineage somewhere because of what your relationships. I've done many exorcisms and many banishings of these critters.
This thing doesn't look good at all.
No, it doesn't. And it's definitely malevolent, and it can be taken away with a good shamanic cleansing. It is absolutely terrified of sage, cedar, sweetgrass, lavender. The smell of those four herbs mixed together, equal proportions, drives it batty. It'll leave. The other thing that keeps it away is crystals. The frequency of crystals makes it very disruptive. This is a being that you need to drive out of your reality.
I'm with that. All right, the next one.
Okay, I'm scrolling down to the next one. And the next one is much more typical of those energies and entities that are there due to government influence. And I really don't know if we want to go there.
All right.
The Men in Black.
The Men in Black. And the third one?
And the third one is Dead On Reality.
Dead On Reality.
Absolutely.
There is
that one and the last one where they're more amorphous.
Yes.
That's showing them in their developmental stage, their cocoon stage. So that would be like...
No kidding. So in other words, then the one on the bottom would be the cocoon stage. The
right.
One just above it would be evolved from.
And that's what they look like. And extremely quick. What I like about this kid, if I can say his name, Kenny, that put it on there, boy, he did that well. It's
Kenny Young.
That's just about as close as I've seen anybody draw them.
Kenny Young says, I have attached a picture that I quickly drew the shadow person I've seen. The shadow person had longer arms and legs than
right.
a normal person, was about 4 feet in height.
About 4 to 5 feet max.
Was hard to get an exact size of the shadow person because I ran across the street really fast. Don't
and
blame you, Kenny.
And they do move quick.
Yeah.
And see, that's why as our metabolism increases, Art, our heightened awareness brings them into the normal awareness screen of perception where we're moving, like, say, at the speed of sound, but they're operating in a parallel dimension and in the dimension which we can access to heightened awareness, and they're moving, say, maybe Mach 4. They're going above the speed of sound. So they're going to appear extremely fast to us. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes all the sense in the world. Yes, of course. All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Thunder Strikes. Hello.
Oh, hi, Art. This is Karen from Iowa.
Hello, Karen.
And about 2 weeks ago, I had a dream that I was flying around and a guy was chasing me with a camera. That was a night dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also had visions that I'm standing there watching some people and they see me. But other than that, when I was a child, I used to speak to some being. I have not seen shadow people, but
okay.
yet I have seen golden light beings that fly around the room.
Those are what we call the Tungashila, which literally means the ancestor spirit beings of benevolence, the guidance.
Okay.
What did
because
you call...
they were absolutely correct in everything they ever told me.
All right. What did you call them again, please? Hold on, ma'am.
We call them Tungashila. It's an Indian word for all my relations, the spiritual beings.
So I guess because they're the good ones.
Yep.
But one thing
I would like to say to this sister is, hon, just because you're dead doesn't make you smart. So they're there, but just because they're in that other world before they come in back into a next incarnation, sometimes they can give you good advice, just like your parents can, and sometimes they're just dead wrong.
Oh, no, they warned me of a fire. They told me what I would be at every age that I asked them.
And
they became
good.
My best friends after my father's death. In fact, they warned me of that, too.
Yep.
All right, thank you very much, and take care. East of the Rockies, you're on there with Shadow Strikes. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thunder Strikes.
Thunder Strikes.
I've got Shadow
morning,
on my mind, my God. Yeah, good morning, sir. Where are you?
Down on Cape Cod.
Cape Cod.
Wow.
Yes. And I've seen them five times since 1981.
You have?
All straight on.
All straight on.
Yes. And the common denominator of them is, to me, they're 2D. They don't have a third dimension.
You're correct. Because,
and,
see, they're in the parallel dimension, brother. What it is that's why they take on this flat, pasty-like, opaque background, and so no light comes through them. And so they are not
third-dimensional
reality.
Black, yeah, you said blacker than black.
Yeah,
right.
Can I briefly just describe them? I've got it written down.
Yes, you may.
I was just doing a little hike in the woods, and you know, it was all kind of broken branches and stuff like that, and I'm walking along, and, the branches are breaking when I walk. But I had a sensation of somebody being near me. And I looked to my right, and about 30 feet away, there was this thing, you know. And every time I moved, it kind of aggressively moved, too. And
you stopped? Did it stop?
Yes.
Okay, that's frequently also referred to as the shadow stalker. In the forest, and if you were around a lot of trees...
Yes.
There are protector spirits that protect the elementals. And those are not harmful. They're very similar to these beings.
Mm-hmm.
But if you move, they move. If you stop, they stop. If you turn around, they turn around.
Yeah,
they're
miners.
They're mimickers.
Yeah.
Every single time, huh?
Yep. And but the only thing I noticed in particular, I thought I was going to get robbed or something at first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but... it when it moved, it didn't make the branches crack.
That's correct, because it's
okay.
One with the forest.
Okay, and then the second one I saw in the car, and it had an angular form. That was in 1992.
Uh-huh.
It was somewhat human form, but it was like angular.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, if you remember at the beginning of the show, I said to Art that frequently, they take on this triangular type of shape.
Oh, I didn't hear that. I missed that.
That I don't want to use this image because I don't want to lead anybody to it. People are so easily led in the mind. That, you know, like you see Count Dracula and his coach, you know, or the vampire type thing. And since we've used that word, maybe unfortunately, parasitic would probably be better than vampiristic. But they have a sort of a... You look at the one that's on the screen on the computer, that's much more accurate. But where you see the fast movement, and because of the extended length of the arms and the legs and the shortness of the mid-torso,
right.
If you catch it as them going away from you, if you understand anything with geometry, it's going to create a triangular or a sort of a triangle over a parallelogram.
I was an aerospace engineer. That's why I was so fascinated about that second one.
Huh. Yeah.
The third one was it was almost a tentacled thing that went through the trees.
Did it make any sound, like a whirring sound?
No.
Did you notice that?
They don't seem to have any mass. You know, it's like it just went through the
that
trees.
That sounds like a wind nymph or a wind spirit.
What is that?
You got to understand, if you were raised in the world I was raised in as a child, I learned that everything around me in nature was a part of me. And that even anything that we create in industry or technology, the computer is nothing but a projected image in technology of the way our basic inner brain mind functions. The brain's simply a transmitter receiver station of the mind.
Yeah,
mind,
well, I've always been close to animals and shellfishing.
Yes.
And
so we have an absolute interconnection, interdependence, and interreliability with all forms of all other things. It's a sacred law. And there are water, wind, earth, fire, and spirit energies that exist in the fourth dimension. and therefore they can become very, very present in our dimension. There's also those kinds of energies that exist in the fifth dimension, meaning primarily in dream time. And those dream beings can force you into a shadow dream. If you're in a shadow dream, it's like you're looking at yourself on a television set. You're not in contextual presence in the dream. When you have that kind of dream, you need to train yourself to wake up, go to the bathroom, go get a drink of water.
Right. Can I just move on to number five real quick?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. as a matter of fact, I was sleeping, and I woke up. My dog was kind of panting or something.
Mm.
And I woke up, and I sat up, and walking, well, it darted at me at first. But what was funny was my dog was sitting there looking 30 degrees away from it, staring at the wall. You know, so it was like it was seeing it, but not in the same space I was. And as I looked at it, it came at me real quick and then slowed down. And, my religious belief, I said the Hail Mary in about 10 seconds. But
if that didn't work, go to the Jewish, whatever works at those times.
Yeah, but then it stopped, and it sank right down through the floor.
Oh, gee.
Now, that was definitely a shadow being, I think, from what you described. I mean, it's hard for me to say that sitting here, not being in the full presence, but I know that I've studied them since I was 6 years old. My grandma taught me about them and what to do with them and how to engage with them and how to banish them. And then I learned about all the other kinds of entities and spirits that are in our world. We actually live in a very busy universe, but most people are just not aware of it.
Obviously.
You can't see them in normal awareness.
All right, so, again, of the photos we've got up there now, the drawings, number three...
Yes, is really, closest. Really good. And actually number four, too, but those really... They're cocoon or amorphous stage right before they... are fully present. So see, the more they feed, the more they become like...
All right, but again, very quickly, because we're at the top of the hour, the top one is not so good, huh?
No, that's definitely what we call a Mali Manitou, which means a malevolent spirit.
All right, hold it right...
of evil intention.
Hold it right there. We'll be right back from the high desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
My real friend came by today. Of his latest friend. He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, whitest hair, the prettiest green eyes.
Huge, dark, the blackest of black came towards me, and the weirdest thing was the first thought I thought is, I can't believe this is Zorro. He looked just like Zorro, the shape.
Yep.
He had the cape and the hat, but he was just all black. And what happened to me was that he came towards me and he grabbed my neck. And he didn't push me down. I just, like, laid down. And he had his hand, I guess, in my neck, and he was moving it around. And then he backed up, and then he just floated away. But what happened was...
Now, this was in 1985?
1985. And... 3 or 4 days later, I got a lump in my throat, and then a month later, it was getting bigger, and so I had to go to the doctor, and they ended up telling me that I had a type of cancer in my thyroid. Now, it wasn't a cancer that would spread, but I had to have my thyroid taken out, and I'm on Synthroid now, you know, for the rest of my life, but it was very weird, and I have... such a big mouth, and in my family, they all just don't listen to me, but they all just think I'm nuts. But the thing is, I told everybody, I tell everybody all the weird things that happened to me, and they just laughed it off, but I've always known it was something, and the odd thing about this is that after that, it took me 10 years, but after that, I started thinking very differently about my life and what's going on and who we are.
Good.
And I changed my life. Now, I look back now and know in 1985 I was not doing well as a human. And it took me, well, in a 10 years, but I got rid of all the negativity in my life. I got rid of everything. And I also got some gifts, and one of them is crows. And
the crow's the messenger of the sorcerer. They're the ones that carry the messages back and forth between the worlds and the dimension. Crow's a very sacred animal.
Yeah, they...
Crow, raven.
Yeah, the ravens and the crows. They warn me when something's coming up, and they warn me by crowing and, mm-hmm. and yelling. And I figured out, you know, where it's going to be coming from, north, south, east, or west. Each mm-hmm. one means male, female, yes. physical, and spiritual, but... I hope I'm doing it right with them. And they never fail. They never fail. And it's like the other day, there was one screaming at me, and I was in such a hurry. I told him to shut up.
Then you must be doing right, then.
I don't know.
Like, and by the way, if you notice, your description matches the second photograph.
Which one?
Very much like a Zorro photograph.
The second photograph on the website.
All right, I'm not online, so I can't see it, but really.
And that's not really a shadow being as we're using it on the broadcast tonight, honey. It's more of the Men in Black. And that program began in 1964. It's got a connection into the whole remote viewing piece. I really don't want to go there. You know, it's...
Gotcha. All right, listen.
It's a male show, and we're dealing with just the shadow beams. Yep. But that's what happened.
All right, let's
Men in Black.
Okay, Thunder, let's have you reload. We've got more photos. And we have got, I'll tell you, the last photo in the series is I don't like at all. So let us begin from just below. You'll see the new one on there. The one that you said looked surprised, right?
Yeah.
All right. If you've reloaded, look at the one just below that. Do you see it?
Vicky Trout.
Vicky Trout, yes.
Yes. Wow.
What do you say to that one?
Again, you got to realize that is notice the similarity to I think number three. I've got to keep in my mind what the numbers are now.
Yes, sir.
That it's very very similar to number three. Again, however, if you notice how this one's got a tempting or a tantalizing type of a presence in the lady's visual.
Yes,
in her perception, and when they do that, they're trying to approach. If I said to you that misery loves company. Would that make sense?
No. No, listen, it does make sense. They're trying to approach, so they would take on a non-threatening or even inviting form.
And like she says, they were full of mischief, but clearly evil.
All right, the one below this we're trying to do, I'm sorry, we're doing all this too fast, but Buck.
Oh.
What in the world?
That one put chills through my spine.
What is that one? What in heaven's name is that?
You're back up to like the top. That's another one of the Mahate Manitus. If I said to you, have you heard of Alibaba and the 40 Thieves? There are 40 denizens of the dark. It's a pretty well-known thing all over the world. That are like the minions of Satan, the devil. What you know? I don't like those names. Art.
Yeah, nevertheless, this one does not look good at
no,
all.
No, it doesn't, and it's got an extremely malevolent presence, but it's a stalker.
A stalker? Yeah, it looks like a stalker.
And
All right.
If those come, you need to get some help.
I hear you. Help.
Shamanic
yes.
help.
All right, Thomas's is next down. It's a pretty big one. And...
Excuse me.
Yeah, that's quite all right.
That's just a dark force entity. I mean, that's a disincarnate spirit that's just plain, pure, and evil. The shadowing under the eyes, especially if the eyes had a reddish or a greenish hue to them.
Yes.
You're talking about an evil person.
Okay.
This could be somebody like, say, Jeffrey Dahmer that decides to come back in and...
You're kidding.
...pay a visit. No, I wished I were, but I'm not.
All right. One more down.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said, too.
That's like number one. Again, it's dealing with one of those Manitous.
That's a bad one, huh?
Yeah, and if you notice, she says she sees him after rainstorms or bad weather. That a lightning and electrical discharge, they're drawn to that. See, it helps them become more present.
Huh.
So they can, they can feed. I maybe shouldn't have used the word vampire because I really don't want people to take off in that direction too heavily, but they're parasites.
Parasites.
And of course, what's interesting is the number of different pictures we have on here of different energies that do exist and can come over into our dimension and be very present. I find that very intriguing.
All right. let's see if we can do this quickly. First time caller line, you're on the air with Thunder Strikes. Hello. Hello there.
Art.
Yes.
Yes, and good evening, Thunder Strikes.
Hello.
I am tickled to death that you are on. For the last several nights, I've been listening to Art and been screaming at the computer here, leave our shadow people alone. There are shadow people, and then you, this evening, have also made it clear that there are other things that can be seen that are not malevolent.
Absolutely. In fact, you're extremely benevolent.
Yes.
Without the elemental spirits and the wind spirits and so forth, we would not have the beauty of nature and Mother Earth as we do.
Yeah, but the problem here, both of you, is I agree, there probably are some wonderful ones out there, but if the average citizen had a gun that would kill whatever entity they saw dead, we'd have nothing but dead entities, good and bad.
Yeah.
I mean, people are so frightened. Out of fear.
Well, that's the thing, though. That's why I'm glad he's making a distinction, because it is important for people to not automatically be afraid. Mm-hmm.
I agree, because, see, you got to realize fear, like I said before, fear is the unknown. Do something about it. Make it known. Go right towards the very thing you fear the most.
Well, it's kind of interesting if you look at what people have sent us in terms of pictures. Do you have a computer, mm-hmm. ma'am?
Yes, I do, but I had to go offline in order to use the phone. I saw the first four, but I've been listening.
All right, then know this. I would say right now it's about 60-40 as we've looked at these, bad to good.
You got it. I would say the same thing.
Yes, and unfortunately, you know, our babies are killing babies.
Yep.
There's a great deal of evil, and I have a lot of young people that come to me and just talk to me. They just all of a sudden open up, and they're unhappy. They have low self-esteem. They are frightened for the world in general. They're frightened for themselves.
Yep.
And when Art had the Hopi elders on, one of the grandmothers said, the role of the mothers in any society is to nurture and pray for the children. But in today's society, the mothers are working. They're not at home. They are not taking care of this.
Hold it. Everybody, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. I must abide by the clock. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Thunder Strikes.
When you see me in the middle of the night cleaning the place, So I was done with my job, and I decided I would spend some time trying to stop the world, not do, meditate, what have you. And I sat there, and I just looked in the mirrors that surround the whole place until basically, for lack of better words, the world fell away.
Mm-hmm.
And up out of the distance came a creature that I could only really describe as a six-foot black cricket would be the best way I could describe this creature.
Mm-hmm.
And Art talked earlier about creatures who beguile and want you to come with them or do something.
They're enticing.
This creature wanted me to come with him into this strange landscape, this nothingness.
Yep.
But what was coming from the distance off to the side was something dark and menacing.
You bet.
This frightened me, and I snapped out of it.
So what was all that?
You had a good experience. But you learned something very, very valuable. Never believe anything. Question everything. Knowledge is something that's sacred, because if it works...
What would have happened had he gone?
You might not have returned.
Okay. I'm trying to move as quickly as I can. On the international line, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, please?
Hi, I'm from Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia?
Yeah.
Well, hello and welcome.
Yes,
hi, how are you? I was just wondering what you would say to somebody who wanted to see shadow people.
That wanted to see them?
Yeah, like, how would I be able to see them?
I don't know. That's something that I would request.
Young lady, just before you go on, Thunder, young lady, how old are you?
27.
27, really? You must be there with your husband, stationed, or are you stationed over there?
No, I'm a Saudi.
Ah.
You're a Saudi?
Well, in your people's tradition, you've heard of the jinn, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The jinn are there are many classifications of gin. From what I understand from a friend of mine that's a practitioner in your people's world, in your people's way, they say they have 72 different varieties or variations of the gin, one of which would be what we're now discussing, which is the shadow beings of the shadow people.
Oh, I see.
But I wouldn't
go
out
looking for
them.
Yeah, it's in our religion also.
I wouldn't go out looking for them.
Your English is absolutely, absolutely impeccable.
Very.
How did your English get to be so good?
Thank you. I used to live in the States, so.
Uh-huh.
To it.
She speaks better English than I do, Art.
Thank you.
I speak kind of Texan, you know.
So you really want to see these beings?
No.
Oh,
no, not really. I'm just interested. It sounds really, I don't know, intriguing.
It's intriguing, huh? But don't be lured by it, because really they're not of any benefit to us.
I know. I'd probably be scared.
I'm sure you would.
I saw them.
Well, you know, if you get scared enough, maybe they will. I mean, they're drawn to that fear.
Well, remember what was said earlier, ma'am, and that is that they feed on that fear. So if you
I understand that.
If you do see one, you'll be giving it snacks.
That's right. You know, and that's not something I'd recommend. Definitely not.
Well, listen, you be sure and call me again, will you?
Okay, I will.
All right.
What? I'm a long time listener.
What?
Great.
Incredible. All right. Thank you very much, and take care.
Well, that was refreshing.
Yeah, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Thunderous Strikes. Good morning.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, this is Doug from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hello, Doug.
I had two questions. One is, you know, on your show, you have talked about rods.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if Thunder could maybe, you might explain it briefly if he's not familiar.
Oh, I will. Thank you for asking the question.
Put that in perspective. And the second one was really, I was going to ask a similar question to the previous caller, but more generally, I've always wanted to have some conscious experience of something in the, you know, otherworldly or some mm-hmm. evidence of something spiritual. And I was just wondering if you could advise how one might cultivate that kind of experience, not necessarily negative.
No, not at all. If you pick up a copy of my book, Song of the Deer, Sundance Journey.
I haven't even asked. No, slow down. Hold on. Yeah. The name of your book, I didn't even know you had one. I'm sorry. What is it?
Song of the Deer.
Song of the Deer.
It's put out by Jaguar Books, and they can pick it up in a local bookstore or Amazon.com, or they can email jagpub, J-A-G-P-U-B, at AOL.com, or they can call toll-free 877.
Whoa.
Okay.
Is that your email address?
No, that's the email of Jaguar Books.
J-A-G-P-U-B at AOL.com?
Right.
All right.
And
or
if they want to get a hold of me, they can get a hold of me at Gunny at keepandbeararms.com. That's keepandbeararms.com.
Another side of you, huh, Gunny?
I'm the president of keepandbeararms.com. It's the largest gun owner's homepage on the Internet.
Oh, the things we learn as the program comes
on.
Oh, yeah. On. And
I'm a very avid Second Amendment.
And good for you. And the 800 number?
And the 800 number for the publisher is 877-855-055.
That's not enough numbers.
877-855-0055.
Oh, 0055.
Right.
Okay. I've got it. That should be
they can reach me at deertribe.org on the webpage.
Deertribe.org?
Yes.
Holy smokes. You've got more conduits electronically to get to you than I do.
But I don't normally respond to any of them. Yeah, just don't gutty it, keep it bare arms, because I'm very, like I said, pro-Second Amendment and very proactive with our...
Yeah, good for you.
Preservation of our Constitution, for crying out loud, but...
Yes.
That's a whole other page of my life.
Indeed. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Thunder Strikes. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi, this is Christine from Albany, California.
Yes.
And thank you both for a fabulous show, and good morning.
Good morning.
I haven't seen one of these things, but I've felt entities around me... good entities, probably for the last 11, 12 years.
And how old are you now, ma'am?
I'm 52. My boyfriend passed away in 99. I feel him.
There you go.
His kitty passed away. I felt her. you mentioned the eye on the top of the head.
Yes.
Ever since
the third eye.
Yeah. Well, on the very top of the head. But
that's called the dream eye or the fifth eye.
Right. Ever since he passed away, I feel tingling up there.
Yes, you would.
Anywhere
from 3 to 7 years after a passing, we feel that contact through, our fifth eye, and especially in our dream time, and those are called our memories.
No, it's when I meditate, when I say prayers before meals, it's on and off all during the day.
Definitely. Remember, you've got two dream times, hon. You've got the dream time here in the third dimension when you're awake like we are right now, hopefully.
Right.
And then
this is more of a dream than...
the dream time at night and when you're asleep.
Okay, good.
And they do overlap each other.
Okay. Thank you both very much for a great show.
Well, thank you, and take care. And I guess I should stop and ask you right here. We're coming to the last hour of the program, and I give all my guests a choice at this time because I know it's getting late.
Not for me.
Not for you, so...
I'm definitely a late-night person.
You're good to go, huh?
Yeah, I'm good to go.
All right, then let's do this one more time. The number, the 800 number to order your book,
yes.
Song of the Deer,
yes.
Is 877-855-0055. That's
correct.
877-855-0055. Song of the Deer, with about 30 seconds to say, what is it all about?
Basically, it's the entire first shield of teachings, the first body of teachings about the Sweet Medicine Sundance, and we include in there how to do positive discharging of your emotional content, your personality and events, your projective pretense, and get rid of the negativity in both a practical, realistic manner. It's a teaching about the whole luminous egg cocoon. For those that are Red Costaneda, he gave you grade school. I'm giving you a master's and a PhD in sorcery.
All right, hold it right there then, and we'll be right back. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Forget everybody, one more hour if your station gets it. If not, then you might ask for the pre-feeds. Every night we pre-feed 3 hours of the previous night's program if your station has it.
It was my fear
that I was feeling. It attached to you, hon, because it's part of your world. It's part of your, what you've assembled in your reality. It was a loved one.
So you think it was just leftovers from my father's passing away?
Well, I mean, you've got to realize I'm sitting here on a very difficult form of communication, but I definitely know the shadow beings, and that's not the behavior.
And that's not what they do. Okay, that's one thing I was worried about, because we sold the house, and I didn't want to turn the house over to somebody and have it have some kind of dimensional problem.
No, it doesn't sound that way. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, two things, Thunder, that we've got to cover.
Mm-hmm.
One, she just kind of touched on. So many people have said that they view some of these beings as death coming to get you or coming to escort you. One form of them does do that?
Yes, but that is the entity that we call Tuwalanani. And by the way, I will not say that word again due to stalking death. And it literally tries to rob your spirit personality or steal it as it goes back to the great realm. There have been thousands of documented instances all over the world by different names of this entity. And it is the personification of evil. The Christians call it Satan, the devil, which is spelled backwards. And by the way, Satan is nothing but not tus, which is nature, or in the Gaelic language, spelled backwards. It's the opposite of life. It's a predatory, malevolent death. It's not a death of one's choosing. It's a total shock or an accidental death.
Gotcha. All right.
If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Too well, I'm afraid. All right. The other thing is rods. Now, if you've never heard my program, which I guess you probably haven't, rods are going to be very difficult to explain to you. A man named Jose Escamilla has been taking extremely high-speed photography and capturing in this photography these long rod-like shapes, which appear to be alive, appear to be darting around almost, he calls them sky fish. And they
almost
they,
like shooting arrows?
Yes, and they move at extreme speeds. And we've got countless photographs of them.
Yep.
But you can't, again, you can just barely see them kind of in the corner of your eye in peripheral vision occasionally.
And it's definitely not an astigmatism.
That's right. Oh, no. These are really captured photographically just fine.
Yes.
Are they part of this world? Do they run with the shadow people?
No, they're actually a part of the Matrix. You're aware of the super strange concept of the universe.
I am.
All right. If I said to you that coming out of the center of your navel is what is called your sovine. So you've got an umbilical cord to your physical body and your physical mother, but you've got an umbilical cord that goes to Selwyn's great-grandmother, the universe, the goddess mother. That sovine at the end of it's got 12 filaments, little strings. Everything in the universe is interconnected through a series of darting beams of light, which are called the threads of awareness by our people. And they are photographable. You can see them. If you're a pilot and you get up above 25,000, 30,000 feet, they're extremely visible up there. I don't know who your gentleman is that's doing the photography, but if you get up in an aircraft, get up around 25,000, 30,000 feet, especially at sunset or sunrise, he would be blown away.
Yeah, I don't think he's tried that yet, but really, really, really good idea. All right.
I mean, he would really be blown away, Art. It's amazing what you can see up above the atmosphere with those things.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Thunder Strikes. Hello.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, Mr. Thunderstrike. So, Art, I want to compliment you on having a great show, first of all.
Yep, thank you.
And, Mr. Thunderstrike, thanks, because I think you're filling in a lot of the blanks for people.
Well, I appreciate that. I certainly hope so.
I'm kind of hoping that you could fill in maybe a couple for me, too. These might be related issues, may not. I have seen shadow people before, primarily when I was a teenager and I was just very highly emotional. And,
that's
you know. And, but anyways, I have this, when I was a child, I had experiences with extraterrestrial beings, spaceships and that kind of thing, which was then followed by a period where a Sasquatch, a Sasquatch would come and stand in the corner of my room at night.
That's good. That's
okay. That's what I was going to ask you, because I was terrified of this thing. It was black, had black, you know, black eyes and everything, but it was a Bigfoot.
Yes. See, we call it, Sasquatch is another native term, but we call it Oshkodon. And it literally means the protector of the animal world. And it's the ruler of the animal kingdom.
And this is what another shaman had told me as well, that it was a female extra-dimensional creature that was watching over me.
Yep. And see, it's interesting enough, those entities called Sasquatch come in twins. They're always born in twins.
Wow.
And,
really?
Yes. And the twin females are the really benevolent ones. When they're males, one will be the harbinger of evil, and one will be the protector of the innocent. It's a very peculiar phenomenon.
You know, what's really strange is that while there was this one that was standing in my room, I would also sense that there was another one that was outside of the house walking around in the yard, and I was really terrified of that one.
You got it right, because it probably was a male. I definitely don't know everything. In fact, I know a heck of a lot less than I really should. I'm trying to always learn. But they definitely travel in pairs.
That's totally far out. The other thing regarding shadow people is I had a dream one time about one, and I consciously took control of this shadow creature.
Good.
And I was like,
did you banish it?
He was holding a guitar. He was a silhouette of a figure holding a guitar, and I was telling him what music to play.
Mm.
Then somewhere during the dream, he reversed it.
Be a shadow request, I guess, huh?
Yeah, something like that. But he totally, it was like a feedback loop, because he reversed it, and he was putting the music in my head.
Uh-huh.
And then that frightened me real bad, and I woke up. And then also I've had dreams.
You're dealing with another form, brother. You're dealing with the one that I discussed earlier on the show called the shapeshifter or the stalker.
Okay.
They can move back and forth. They can even appear almost as totally human.
All right.
Yeah, this one had a very distinctly human form.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Listen, we've got to leave you.
Okay.
I very much appreciate your call. Thank you. And very quickly, refresh your computer and go to picture number 24. Yeah, 24 is, it shows shadow people milling around. It shows three of them. The person says, in my bedroom, and they always look down, not at me. This is still on page two. All you've got to do is refresh, I think.
Ooh. Notice the similarity in picture number three, Art?
Yes.
Except he's got one there that appears to have on a hat.
Yeah.
Those are definitely shadow beings. There's no question about it. I'd bet my medicine pipe on it.
But they're not even, they don't, you know, if you look at that, they're not even interested in him. They're just milling.
Right.
Is the right word, I think.
I would have three questions. A, is he living in a house that's had any kind of real violence or horror or whatever, trauma? Two, is he fairly new into the house? And three, has he done anything to in his personal life to attract that kind of an energy?
All right.
When they're in this mode, they're in what's called the ambivalent mode.
All right. We've got to hold it right there. We're again at the bottom of the hour. Time moves quickly with shadow people. I'm Art Bell, and this is for the guy who made the dedication, the music, all of that. This is for you, bud.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I am a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, and you're going to regret it."
It was wrapped with a sinew, and she told me that I should keep it around my neck always, and if I didn't wear it around my neck, I should keep it in a box with fresh cornmeal. Now, is this something that I still do it because I'm pretty superstitious by nature, but is there something to this, or is she just having a good laugh at my expense?
No, there's definitely something to it, and she gave you the best medicine possible. It answers the other brother's questions about psychic self-defense. Fetishes or talismans are representations that certain entities and energies react negatively to, just like we react negatively to a cockroach. They're repulsive, so we tend to stay away from cockroaches. When you wear a bear fetish or a deer fetish, elk, those are energies and animals that are totally repulsive to the shadow being.
All right, caller, does that answer your question?
Yes, she did mention something about a connection with deer as well, but what is a shadow runner?
Same thing. It's just that you can't translate people or the word person in Navajo language.
All right. All right. So from Korea, boy, we've been bopping around the world tonight.
No kidding.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Thunder Strikes. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, where are you?
Hi, my name's Dorothy, and I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Okay.
And my question is that 2 years ago I had breast cancer, and I've since been cured, but before I was diagnosed, I would have these maybe two or three times experience with a man dressed in black with a big black hat and a black cape, and I thought I was crazy. But one time he was like coming at me, and the other time he was just standing there. But I could not, it would be after waking up, but I could not move. I was like paralyzed. I couldn't talk. And it was very scary. But ever since I was diagnosed and then cured, I haven't had any experiences like that. I've always had God in my life, and I feel that, I'm not really afraid of them because it never hurt me. But, is this the same thing that you're talking about with the...
No, this is the third or fourth time. This is one of the men in black.
And this is the thing that you can't talk about?
Not for the purposes of this program. I know a whole lot about the Men in Black
and my military service. And
maybe we'll do a whole nother show on the Men in Black.
Okay, and if I could just say one more thing. I think we've scared ourselves a little bit, but if we could just kind of move out, you know, from these shadow people into the light now and talk about what we can do to stop it.
To get away from it.
Yeah.
Did you hear the newscast in the last hour? About the children, with the weapons.
Yes.
All right. Listen, Thunder. I want you to look, reload, and look at the last photo that my webmaster has slavishly put up for us to see. Number 30.
He's definitely working overtime tonight.
Yeah, he sure is. Number 30 is really interesting because it's two of something. That almost appear connected. Are you able to see it?
Yes.
What are we looking at there?
Wow. I don't know. If it were a little more detailed, it could possibly be, you know, like what we call the Sasquatch twins that we were speaking of earlier.
Sure.
But I honestly don't know. I can't tell from the rendition.
All right. Then go up one photo to number 29 and tell me where.
That is stalking death.
That is stalking death. Death? Oh, God, that's the one. Don't repeat the name. You said you wouldn't, and I have a feeling the roof will fall if you do. But that's it?
Yes. And it's been described with the Grim Reaper. You know, something's interesting, Art. If you look at some of the cave drawings, you know, if you go back and look at some of the Paleolithic drawings and whatever,
yeah.
You'll see that when they carbon date, when they date those,
yeah.
That... they're dating when the shadow beings first began to appear. You'll see that same Amorphous-type shape that we've got right here on our modern-day commuter screen. You'll also see the entity of Stalking Death. I mean, there's one in Canyon de Chelly that's virtually like this one on my screen.
So, in other words, if you see something like that, it's stalking you.
Yes.
Otherwise, you don't see it.
Right.
You don't want to see that.
Absolutely not. And if you do, it's time to either you have to know your death song or it's time to get ready to meet benevolent death and drive stalking death out of your circle.
Whew. Boy, I'll tell you, I asked for some pictures and drawings, and I got more than we all got more than we bargained for by a long shot. And we got more than we bargained for with you too. I had no idea what to expect tonight. This has been an incredible program. I want to promo your book for you, which we've underdone. It's called Song of the Deer.
Yes.
And we've got an 800 number where you can order. Is that a daytime 800 number?
I think it's, yes, it's probably daytime.
Daytime, huh? It's 877-855-0055. That's 877-855-0055. Now, I would like to get your personal email address.
Yes, it's Gunnie, G-U-N-N-I-E, at keepandbearsarms.com, and capitalize each of the words.
Wow.
So it's K-A-D-A, should be capitalized, the first letter of each word.
As in keep and bear right. arms.
And they can also go to our Deer Tribe at deertribe.org, because that's our... page of all the medicine and the shamanic teachings we do and what have you all over the world.
How much is Song of the Deer? You know?
Well, let me look. We got it here.
And you're saying it's also in bookstores?
Yes, and it's $16.95 USA and $26 Canadian.
Okay.
And they can get it through Amazon.com also, I think.
Really?
Yes.
So, well... it's like I don't know how to thank you enough for being here tonight. And
it's a great honor to be on your show, Art. I really appreciate the invitation.
It's exactly what I needed. I mean, you really are exactly what I needed. And I thought there would be no chance of finding somebody who would be a real expert in this category. I didn't even think there was such a thing, but here you are. Now,
let me just begin one thing, Art. I'm not an expert. Grandfather was an expert. But I learned as much from that man as I could in the years that I studied with him. And You know, unfortunately, he crossed over to 108. I didn't get to learn everything I would like to learn, but I'm still trying to learn myself from other elders. And so, you know, the thanks really goes to my relations that have taught me what I now have shared with you.
You really also know about the men in black, huh?
Yes, sir, but that's coming from another field. That's coming from my military experience, the stuff I did overseas, and
it may well be that I will come back to you if I can, either on the Shadow People or the Men in Black.
Whatever I can do to help.
So, again, gosh, thank you for being here, my friend.
It was my pleasure, totally.
Okay, good night.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night. All right, listen, everybody. Oh, boy, wasn't that something. Listen. Tonight, when we come back, we're going to be doing Ghost to Ghost AM. There will be no guest tomorrow night at all. It's going to be all you. So this is one of those programs where you want to notify your friends, neighbors, relatives, whatever. You know, send them a note, send them an email. Tell them Ghost to Ghost is coming up tonight. It's all you, and it's all your ghost stories. And it'll be on an interesting day when you think about it. It'll be on Friday the 13th. Yeah, I planned it that way. Anyway, we're out of time. And so Ghost to Ghost, tell your friends. Don't forget, stations, that we now provide 3 hours of pre-feed of the previous night's program before we begin each live night's program. So with that, from the high desert, ta-ta.